Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get the puck. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Good afternoon, everybody. I am John Schmoke, joined by Paul Dottino. We had a little issue yesterday, so we're going for 2 hours today to talk Giants football and NFL draft. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, 201-939-4513. We'll be joined by Dan Shanka from OurLads.com, a former NFL scout. He's worked for the Chiefs. He's worked for the Eagles. He's worked for the Redskins. General manager and national scout for Our Loud's NFL scouting services. He'll be joining us in just a couple of minutes. We'll get him on the line right now. And, Paul, not a whole lot of new news. Shane Ray stuff kind of filtering around with the marijuana stuff. And here's how I look at it. For the two of us.
Filtering around. I like how you said that.
No pun intended. For the two of us who are leery of guys like Randy Gregory and Shane Ray as tweeners for a 4-3 defense.
Yes.
All these other issues put aside.
Yes.
It's probably not a good thing for the Giants for these two guys to get pushed further down the board, because the preference for Big Blue, at least from my perspective and your perspective, is to have these guys go off the board before the Giants pick, so more guys fitting to the Giants system on offense and on defense will be on the board when the Giants selected number 9.
Could not agree with you more, John, because when you're in the position like the Giants are in that top 10, the one thing that you want really, really badly are for guys who you know you have no interest in at all, guys who don't fit your scheme, or guys who clearly would be clogged up by your depth chart. You want those guys to go as many picks in front of you as possible to push down fellas that you would be interested in. So there's no question. The fact that there are two quarterbacks probably in the top 10 is wonderful. The fact that there are all of these tweener pass rushers who fit a 3-4 is great news for the Giants. And then all of a sudden now you get these guys starting to slide. And that becomes an issue, because now who's going to jump those guys on the value board, and will those guys be potentially guys that would be better suited to what the Giants need? We're 2 days away, John, and quite frankly, as I was talking to one of my personnel guys, not only yesterday, but then again literally 10 minutes ago, he said to me, you know, for stuff like this to come out so late, right before the draft, I mean, we're talking now 48 hours practically.
Yep.
Okay. That is just almost inexcusable to some degree, because he said these teams and the league have so many people, you know, investigating the backgrounds and stuff on guys. It's almost like, is that a media surprise or a team surprise? Teams probably knew about the Ray thing before we did.
Right, obviously. All right, well, let's find out what our guest thinks about it. Dan Shanka, general manager and national scout for OurLouds.com, former NFL scout for the Eagles, Redskins, and Chiefs. Dan joins us now on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Dan, how are you? Good to talk to you. How's everything going on your end this very busy week?
Well, I'll tell you what, great. It's finally, we can kind of see the end of the tunnel, and the train's not coming right now. Unfortunately for Shane Ray, a train came right at him. But I shouldn't say, unfortunately, hey, when you do stuff dumb and like Gregory and Ray, then you get what you deserve. And then it also gives you some insight to these guys before maybe you draft them. So, but anyway, no, I tell you what, we're excited about it. We look at these guys since May of last year, and we're excited as anybody to see where they're going to go.
Well, how much do you think Gregory and Ray have hurt themselves? Are we talking going from top 10 to high teens, or are we talking 20s or maybe even early second round now for these two very dynamic pass rushers?
Well, they, you know, hey, there's 32 teams out there that look at stuff differently. You know, I mean, it's just, it's amazing, because, you know, some people would have them on their sideboard and say, hey, we'll go with these other pass rushers, but, you know, but they knew. See, Ray tested positive before in college, and the teams knew that, but, you know, if you don't do it again, because when I was with the Eagles, we drafted a guy in the first round that we had on our sideboard, actually, but the guy we were going to take got taken ahead of us. So we ended up taking this guy, and he never had a problem, never tested positive in the league, never, you know, but he did in college. And so maybe, you know, people thought Ray was like that, that, hey, it's a one-time deal. It's hey, that's the way it goes. But now you bring the, and you start to get a pattern of bad behavior, then, you know, you really got to question, you know, things, especially the type of behavior, you know. So, but anyway, I think that both those guys, I mean, Gregory has always bothered me anyway, because first of all, he's not very big. He's 235 pounds. You look at those thin, slender, ectomorphic outside linebackers that played. I mean, have got drafted last few years, like the Deion Jordans and the Mingos, guys that are slender. Like, hey, they haven't done anything because they can't play the run, you know. And now if you put Gregory outside the nine technique, let him, you know, rush wide up the field, he can do that. But, you know, he's pretty sloppy. He can't play the run, you know. So, I mean, there's he does have some ability as a pass rusher. And, hey, how high do you take a third down, you know, pass rusher? Hey, Seattle took one in the middle of the first round, and they're paying $500,000 a sack for Urban out there. You know what I mean? So I guess if that's what you want to do, that's where you take them.
Hey, Dan, let me ask you about the conduct thing once again before we get off of that. Does it bother you more as a draft guy or as a team guy if a player makes a stupid mistake like he does that reflect more on his lack of common sense, or does it reflect more on his character that you think he's truly a bad guy? Which bothers you more as somebody who's going to be drafting a potential prospect?
Well, I tell you what, if I'm a team, I don't like it at all, you know. And but unfortunately, if you look over the reports for all these players every year like I do, there's quite a – I mean, you'd have to weed out quite a few of these players. It's a matter of you're taking the best of the worst, you know, on some of the guys. You know, some guys stumble, and some guys just absolute, you know, idiots, you know, that you don't even want around your ball club. Because I tell you – you know, you hear teams say, "Well, we'll bend, you know, and this and that. We'll take a guy a little bit later, if you know." But you know, those guys are not worth your trouble. If you go back, you know, you get every once in a while you get a super all-time great player that you know he's gonna makes a mistake all the time. Well, people will, you know, bend over backwards for them and give them every, you know, chance. But some of the fringe guys, hey, you just take off the board, let them go back about their business. You know what I mean? I mean, the guy's got to be an all-time, all-world, all-infinity, I think, before you would draft them. And you know, the NFL's not full of choir boys, you know. And you know, you want some of those guys on your defense or what have you that, you know, just reckless and just absolutely great, you know, high-motored. But unfortunately, you get some of the off-field bad stuff too. But so you just gotta draw a line in what your team wants to do. And a lot of times it goes to the owner. Say, hey, like right now, Arthur Blanks, he said, well, maybe we should take a few of those edge guys because we've had all these squeaky clean guys. Well, maybe that's just him talking, but we'll see. Hey, will we take Randy Gregory at 8? You know what I mean?
Now, Dan, I know so, John wants to get into some prospects with you. I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to ask you this because you mentioned the tweeners. You know, these guys who are better 3-4 outside linebacker fits, or potentially if they can drop, they need to show they can do that, John. We've talked about this 1,000 times before. There's always a trend. You know this. It goes in, it's cyclical, and there's a circular trend about, okay, this is the way it goes for a while, and then it goes the other way. I'm kind of professing that based on what I saw last year at the end of the season, the teams that had the most success and then drove into the postseason, that the power running game is starting to gain some traction again in the National Football League. It's been a passing league for several years. I know the rules want to lean it that way, John.
Absolutely.
But I do think that if you look at the teams that were more successful last year, they started to rediscover the power running game, which says to me that the worm may start to turn a little bit against some of these tweeners and undersized edge pass rushers. How do you see it, Dan? Am I looking at a mirage here, or do you think it is starting to turn?
I think you're 100% right, and I'll tell you why. Because the quarterback, there's not enough quarterbacks to go around, you know. And, these quarterbacks, you got to have a quarterback to win in the National Football League. But you better have a strong running game and a great defense if you got a young quarterback, because you're trying to compensate for not having, you know, the Peyton Mannings or the Eli Mannings or the Philip Rivers or the Rodgers, Lux. of the world. There's not enough of those guys to go around. And so, yeah, in fact, I was just on a show in Chicago, and I said the exact same thing. I said, the worm is starting to turn. I said, you're going to see more of these runners are going to, you know, gain traction literally on the football field because the quarterbacks can't hold up because they're getting just beat up. You know, and you got to have your stars, the Roethlisbergers. You got to have those guys out there to help you win Super Bowls. So now, hey, let's start giving the ball a little bit more. And what it does, you know, all these people, like you said, we're getting these undersized rushers and things like that, or their linebackers, or, you know, the 6 foot, 230-pound guys that can really run and stuff like that. Well, now, hey, you're lining those big offensive linemen up there and say, hey, let's strap it on, friend. You know, we're going to get a good fit in you and drive you off the ball. So, yes, I agree with you 100%.
John, I love these old-school guys when they come on our show because these old-school guys get it. Old school's the best school, right, Dan?
You bet. I tell you what, now, I'll guarantee you that there isn't an offensive line coach out there that doesn't want to, you know, line up and run that ball right down your throat.
All right, Dan, I want to spend some time with you on some of the second, third, and even day three picks. But for now, I want to get into the first round just a little bit here. I'm going to assume for a second, and I think these are fair assumptions. You tell me if you disagree, that both quarterbacks will be gone in the top eight. You're going to have Fowler off the board, Leonard Williams will be off the board, and Amari Cooper will be off the board. I think those are going to be the first five players taken. Now, then the question comes down to, what are the Falcons going to do, what are the Jets going to do, and what are the Bears going to do? What players do you think are going to go off the board when those three teams pick at 6, 7, and 8?
Well, I tell you what they should do. Now, I don't know what they will do.
Well, what should they do, Dan?
I mean, Chicago, they keep dreaming about having a receiver. I mean, and yet they haven't stopped the run, you know, in 2 years, and they're not the monsters of the Midway anymore. You better get some run stuffers up inside there, okay? And, I mean, Danny Shelton would be a perfect pick for them, yeah, in my opinion, at 7. They want to run a 3-4 defense. They don't have a nose tackle. So what are you going to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they've got to go with a nose tackle in that group. So, I think the Jets, now they could do a couple different things. They brought in receivers, you know, and you know, maybe their fans have dreams of a Cooper or a White. I mean, I don't know. They need another pass rusher out there. So I think that the best pass rusher, and I think that Maccagnan would like to trade down, as we'd like to get more picks because they've only got 6 picks, and people keep saying, oh, they want to trade up for Mariota. Well, I want to tell you something. Let's get a good coach in there and see what they can do with Geno Smith first, because, I mean, in my opinion, he was very poorly coached for 2 years. You don't have a quarterback to go down the field, and it's more than anybody but Aaron Rodgers in the National Football League when you're a rookie in a very complex offense. Anyway, that's another story for another fan base, okay? But anyway, so I would think they want to trade down there or get bring in a pass rusher. Arguably they could look for a tackle, but Pete is probably not – I mean, he's a good tackle, I think. In fact, we got him going to the Giants at 9 because I think the Giants like want a big guy, whether it's defense or offense in there. But anyway, they could consider Pete up there too. So I think those positions, and there was one other team.
Falcons.
Redskins?
Falcons.
Falcons. Okay. Hey, the Falcons, they got to have a pass rusher.
Yeah.
They can't rush the passer. I mean, they had like 16 sacks or something like that last year.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot – they got to get some people to pressure the quarterback, okay? And whether it's – hey, if the owner says, well, let's take Gregory, okay? Well, hey, there he goes. I mean, he's going to be going to, you know, the Falcons. But they'll probably take the best pass rusher left except for those, you know, those other two guys unless they come out with a good spin. Well, you know, Shane Ray, that was he only got caught 2 times for smoking pot. Or, Gregory, he only got caught 3 times, you know, for smoking pot. So we'll see what the spin is there, but they got to have a pass rusher.
All right, Dan, let me ask you this. Who is most likely to trade up into the top 10 picks ahead of the Giants at number 9? Because you hear a lot about – you know, the Eagles trying to move up for Mariota. Of course, that would be up in that range. The Jets have been talked about. You think they're going to be moving down.
Chargers.
Chargers, another team that everybody's talking about, maybe with Tennessee making a move. Which trade do you think is going to totally upset the apple cart in the top 10?
How about San Diego trading with Tampa Bay? at one for Rivers.
You really think they would do that? Tampa, every indication seems to be that they want this Winston character, who, by the way, I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole. And I can't believe Tampa Bay's even seriously thinking about him, John, because I don't think mechanically he is a sure thing franchise number one overall pick quarterback, aside of everything else.
That's why I think that they made that call, you know, San Diego, and say, hey, we want to get in on this deal. And, you know, you get the number one pick in this draft, and you can go ahead and take Mariota at one, you know, because that's who they take. They wouldn't take Winston either. I think they would take Mariota at one. And then, but it's an even deal. You know what I mean? That's the only sticky wicket, because obviously San Diego will want more than just that first round pick, or the first pick, I'm sorry, of the draft.
Yeah.
But I think Tampa Bay says, no, you get it's even up Rivers for, you know, the first pick. And then you'd really start seeing stuff shaking down because, hey, who's going to take Winston? Because I don't think Tennessee would take him. You know what I mean? That would really shake up that you talk about shaking up the first part of the draft. That would do it. And you know what? I think 80% is set. The 80% that Winston's going to go there. But I still think there's wiggle room for what you said. I think some people in Tampa think, well, we got to take Mariota over Winston, and then I still think that trades. But other than that, 80%, I think, you know, we'll probably see Winston go, but there's wiggle room.
All right, Dan, we're joined by Dan Shanka from arrowlabs.com. I'm going to put you on the clock here at 9 for the Giants. You mentioned you have Andrews Pete going to them. Why do you think Pete's a better fit for the Giants than, say, a Brandon Scherff and Eric Flowers, a DJ Humphreys, Leo Collins, some of the other offensive linemen on the board?
Well, some of those guys certainly aren't worthy of it. I mean, Humphreys has got the feet, but he's got an injury. He's got an injury history, and there's other guys that are better. He's got left tackle feet. Okay, that's what you like about him. But really, he's a second round guy.
Okay,
he's got a lot of things to do. So no, I would take now. Sure, if the Giants want to play him. I still think he's got the range to be a left tackle in the league. I think that, I tell you what he's going to be. He's going to be a Pro Bowl guard. Okay? But so what are you going to do? Kick, Pew inside and then, bring Scherff in and play him inside at guard, say at left guard with, you know, kick out Jerry and then put in Scherff in there, or you know, play him at right, you know, over Schwartz. Or is Pew going to go back inside? Then you put, Scherff outside at right tackle. That probably could work. I mean, he's a good player. He's going to be a Pro Bowl guard, in our opinion. Okay, that's what he's going to be best at. But are you going to run the same problem with his feet? Things like, I mean, he's got better feet than Pew. Okay, so what do you do? That's the thing. You're not drafting the same guy because Scherff is a little bit better. But, you know, are you going to get a big rangy tackle that's 6'7", 310 pounds? It is a left tackle. The best left tackle in this draft is Pew. I've talked to
Pete.
Too many
it's
offensive
Pete.
Line coaches out there. They all have Pew as the top left tackle, okay?
You mean Pete then. You mean Andrews Pete, right?
I'm sorry, Pete.
Yeah, that's
I'm
okay.
I'm sorry, Pete. Yeah, those Ps get me screwed up. But, yeah, Pete is the best left tackle in five different offensive line coaches' opinion that I talked to. So, you know, and we had him, that's where we had him too. But, you know, I mean, and a guy like, I tell you what, like Brandon Irving, for instance, from Florida State, I talked to those different offensive, Cameron Irving, I'm sorry,
yeah,
it's Cameron.
Cameron.
Two of them liked him at tackle, two liked him at guard, one liked him at center. You know what I mean? So, but anyway, Pete was a consensus as the top left tackle. So that's why we put him in there for the Giants. And then go ahead and kick Pew inside, you know, and then put, and then if you want to put Beatty over or play, they'll play Pete at right tackle. You know what I mean? And kick Pew inside, maybe make him the left guard over Jerry, the weak link, because we think Richburg's going to be a really good player. He can do that, but then you got a big rangy tackle. And if they don't take an offensive tackle, I think then they go interior defense. And now we like Sheldon, he can play in there in a four, but he's probably the best at nose tackle.
How do you project Eric Flowers, Dan? Do you see him as a project? Is he a guy that's going to step in and play right away? Do you see him long-term on the left side or the right side? How do you project Eric Flowers?
Yeah, I think he's going to start. He's a plug-and-play right tackle right now, okay? He's a big man and strong guy. Drops his head a little bit fundamentally and mechanically. He's got some things to work on because in pass pro he'll drop his head a little bit. But, I mean, the Giants will like him because he's a big, wide body, thick guy, long arms, all that stuff. He's got – in fact, we had him in our first mock draft, I think, of the year that we did. We only done four. I think we had Flowers going to the Giants, you know. But, you know, I think this, that he's going to – no matter where he lands, he's going to start for somebody at right tackle right now. I think he's a little ways away from being a left tackle because he's a little bit more mauler than he does have athletic ability now, but he's a little bit more mauled than maybe just, you know, a good and pass pro, a little bit better in the run game.
You know, Dan, there's a very strong feeling around these parts that the Giants need to add some safety help. If they're going to do that, let's just say they get an offensive lineman in round one, which, of course, I know you don't know me real well, but that's what I'd like to see them do in getting Sheriff. But if they're to add a safety in round number two, who would you think is going to be in that 40 range? Because it's not a great crop of top-heavy safeties. Would you go to a guy like a Rowe or a Pruitt or one of those guys if you think they're going to be there at around 40? Or do you look to maybe convert a corner, a guy like P.J. Williams, who, of course, now apparently the DUI has been erased? Do you look for one of those corners who need to convert, and do you go that way if you're going to try to get a free safety at number 40?
I tell you what, I think you kind of hit on something when you said Eric Rowe, because here is a corner with safety, or, I'm sorry, a safety with corner skills. He started safety for 3 years at Utah.
Yeah.
This year they moved him to corner, you know, and he's a guy. In fact, he was our top. We rate the guys athletically by position at the combine. In fact, that's on our website, and the top athletic defensive back, and you guys have all heard about, you know, Byron Jones and all that
stuff.
But Eric Rowe was the top athletic defensive back at the combine at any of the secondary positions. So he's a very good athlete. He's got some size. And, you know, anymore, the safety is as valued as much as a cornerback in the league because a lot of teams are playing with three safeties,
yeah.
You know, and they're playing the big nickel and things like that. Well, Eric Rowe at 40, if he's there, that's the thing, because I think, you know, what happens is, like you said, there's not many safeties out there. So as people were stacking their boards, they're going, geez, there's no safety we like, you know, out here. There's not many. Or we got, you know, you got Collins, who's a good run player, but you wonder if he can get over the top and, you know, da-da-da. So, yeah, Rowe starts, you know, standing out like a sore thumb on your board and say, well, hey, he might be our guy. So I don't know if he'll be there at 40, but if he is, I think it'd be a great pick for the Giants.
Where else, Dan, do you think that we're joined by Dan Shanka from OurLads.com, former NFL scout. Dan, where do you see value? If you don't want to give players, that's fine. But in terms of positions, where do you see some depth and some value on the board in night number two when the Giants select in round two and round three? Where can the Giants get the most bang for their buck with those two picks, you think?
Well, I think receiver. I think it will be real good in that 40 range. I think running back, you know, will be good in the 40 range. I think possibly some defense, and I don't think he'll be there because I had him in the first round, and when we started, you know, stacking the guy stuff, Mario Edwards is a guy that I really, really like, and I got him in that second round, and it wouldn't surprise me if he goes in the first because he's versatile where he can play, you know, defensive end. He could play defensive tackle. If he's there at 40, I think it'd be a great pick because he's such a versatile guy, and he can, I mean, he's just, if you put on that Auburn, and, you know, when the first time you study a guy, when he played against Auburn in their national championship, I just can't get out of my mind what a great player he was. And this year he gained a little weight, lost a little weight, up and down, and then toward the end of the year he started playing like he, you know, did against Auburn. So I think he's a heck of a football player. So, yeah, he's going to be there. I think it'd be a great value picking, you know, in that area for him. I think it just depends on what happens at the top, some of these other guys that come, like Cooper from Washington State, a big defensive lineman that's very versatile. You know, in that four-man front, You know, like I said, it all depends on how you play the guys, but there's going to be some value at 40, also at the cornerback spot. You know, and the Giants, as you guys know, have tried like heck over the last, you know, how long, 5 years or so, trying to get corner. They just, you know, keep getting injured and stuff like that. It's
sure.
been a you know, string of bad luck. But I think a guy – but I tell you, another guy that we like, too, is Amos out of Penn State, a guy with corner skills to play safety, okay? He's another guy. Maybe Harris from Virginia. There's a safety that could possibly be there. I don't know if Randall – Randall should – he might be there at 40, another safety from Arizona State, but – you know, but I think the guy that you kind of hit on, I think Eric Rowe is a guy that you got to keep your eye on.
Let me ask you this. Can you pick out for me a strong physical blocking tight end who may only be one-dimensional in that he's a terrific blocker, but I'd like to see the Giants grab a strong inline run-blocking tight end who complements Larry Donnell, who clearly has receiving skills in that he caught a bunch of passes last year, but in the run game – That's where he needs to improve.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Heierman from Ohio State, you know,
I
he's
like
injured
him.
A lot this year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he would be the guy I think you're describing. He's, I think, probably the best blocker. It depends on what you, you know, you ask a guy to do, an inline blocker, but Heierman probably be, you know, in that neighborhood. Now, Croft did a lot for Rutgers this year. He did more blocking and receiving, which I'm sure he didn't like, but he could be taking that, you know, a little more. And then I tell you, Boyle from Delaware,
yeah.
You know, here's a guy, 270, and, you know, that it probably go in the fifth round and it is a good blocker, you know. So I think that, but Heierman would probably be my choice in the fourth round, maybe late third.
You know, we had, what was it, the Bama guy on, one of the Bama writers, and I brought up Vogler, and I thought that he could be a late round or even potential undrafted free agent steal as a guy who really does that well. And apparently in his workouts postseason here in the offseason, he has shown very well in terms of his athleticism, too. Any thoughts on him?
Yes. You're right. You're exactly right. Because Vogler, like him a lot. We got him going in the seventh round.
You do.
But I'll tell you what, he's exactly what you said. I mean, here's a guy that got lost in the shuffle with the Coopers and O.J. Howard's down there and what have you. And all he does is he's just really a solid blue-collar guy. He's 6'6", you know, 260, 265, runs pretty good. And, he knows what his role is, and that's blocking. So, we got him being drafted also, and we do like him.
Yeah, Dan, great stuff. Final question for me before he let you go. I know you guys in the scouting industry like to pick out your sleepers. Give me a couple names if you have them. Around 3, 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and we're into the 5th, 6th, 7th round. Who are some guys you think might still be around that a team can get and might be a surprise contributor? Special teams maybe at first, but then start contributing down the road on offense or defense.
Well, can I tell you what I told Mel Kiper when Kiper tried to call me all the time when I was scouting? I said, Mel, if I tell you, they're not sleeping. But anyway, I like some defensive backs. There's a guy named Magner out of Texas State. Now, he's going to go a little higher, though. He's going to be in that third round area, I think, because he's not a lot of people know about him, though. I mean, the NFL teams know about him, but I'm talking about the casual fan.
Yep.
But there's some guys, the corners out there. I mean, well, hey, say, for instance, there's Tull, who's an outside linebacker, pass rusher kind of guy from Tennessee Chattanooga. He's a sleeper for all practical purposes. A lot of people don't know about, but he's got a lot of talent, and he can play on all the special teams. He's going to make a team, I'll tell you that right now. But, you know, there's guys like right down the road from me at Bowie State, Lee, the tight end there. He's 270 pounds, runs 4.6. He catches the ball, and he's a great kid, an ascending blocker, and he could be in that mix as a sleeper that, you know, people aren't talking about. There's big safety at the Florida Atlantic named Parms that played in the East-West that knocked your lights out and is a very tough guy. Coleman, a corner at Tennessee that we got in the fifth round, fourth, fifth round area, really got great feet and just can really – got good short area quickness. Another guy named McCain from Memphis, a great feet, A guy that's got super short area quickness and it reacts well to the ball. So there's going to be this. I tell you what, this is scout's draft, gentlemen, because this here once that those first round comes off there. In fact, I tell you what, from about 12 through 60, you're kind of getting the same player, except at different positions, if you know what I mean. And there's guys that are going to go at the 50th pick in this draft that some people probably had at 32 or 33 on their board. So there's going to be some good, solid players to pick up.
I only have one final quickie for you, Dan, and that is based on what you just said, because you opened up a Pandora's box for me. Let's say you're the Giants at 9, and you don't really have a strong conviction about a guy who you really thought was going to get there and doesn't. So do you then move down a few spots and try to pick up an extra second or third rounder? Since you're telling me now you think that second group of value players is relatively the same?
If your guy is – if you can't get your guy. Now, their guy might be Scherf. You know what I mean? If that's the top guy on their board, Jerry's going to say, hey, we'll take him at 9. Okay?
And he should. If that's the guy, then they should take him.
Exactly. Exactly. But if they lose their guy – Giants have always been good about taking the best player available, and on their grades, they might have, maybe Trey Waynes is right, sitting right there looking at him, and they may, and you couldn't argue him taking him at 9.
I love this guy.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. And so I think they take their top guy. I think somebody's going to be there. The guy on their board, one of their three or what have you, two may disappear, but that third one may be there for him at 9. Or
Dan,
probably will be.
Dan, great stuff. We'll stay in touch. We'll talk down the road. Thanks so much for the time. Great information. And enjoy the draft on Thursday. It's a lot of work coming to fruition for a lot of people around this country, especially people like you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Dan.
That's Dan Shanka, OurLads.com. Former NFL scout. Great stuff from him. And, folks, we took him a half hour. Do you know why? We have another 90 minutes to go. And we're going to be taking your calls for all 90 minutes at 201-939-4513 and your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. We know you're pumped up for the draft, so let's get to your calls. Paul?
One thing that he said, John, which I think is really, really very interesting, he said 12 guys are on that top shelf. We've been saying about 15, 12, 15. Bottom line is those are your penthouse guys, your elite guys. And any one of those guys could go in the top 10. And then, as he said, he identified it now all the way back to 60 was the second grouping of players.
Well, I know. Well, I think I've said it to you on the show. Maybe I've said it to Lance or Anita. But I've read reporters report that a lot of, from team to team, the 25th player on one board could be the 50th player on another board. That 20 to 50 area is very ambiguous from team to team. So you might be able to get somebody in the late second round that could be a first-round player on your board.
A mid-first
round
player.
Based on how this goes. So it's very interesting to see how this draft plays out. And, you can get some real good players in the second and third round of these drafts.
Well, that also tells me now, because if you're going 60, now you're at the very bottom of the end of that second round just about. It does say to me then there's another gap going into the third.
Right.
Odds
are one of your guys could still be left there.
Possibly. And I still think we didn't get more into it. Hey, we had them long enough. I think there are a lot of 53 make-it players in the third and fourth rounds, John. A lot. They may not be starters. They may wind up being second stringers. But a lot of make-it players in the third and fourth. And let's face it, that's where the Giants need to hit.
They, no doubt about it. 201-939-4513. You guys have been holding very patient. Let's start line three and go with Joey in Virginia. Joey, you're up first. What's up?
Hey, John, P. Dots. How you guys doing today?
What's up, Joey?
Hi. Good. I had a quick funny story for your prediction and a question.
Okay.
Me and my 2.5-year-old daughter, we were watching the mock drafts that you guys are doing on Big Blue. David Deal did one with you, and then And then, of course, P-Dot comes up, and, of course, you have to take Schreff off the board.
Of course.
So my daughter looks at me and says, Daddy, why does John want to give P-Dot a heart attack? So, P-Dot, feel for you, buddy.
You know what? You
I'm
make
sorry,
sure
John,
you.
I had to bring it up,
That's
buddy.
Funny.
Sorry,
you
pal.
Give her an extra cupcake for dessert tonight, okay?
You guys,
she stumps up with me.
She bleeds big blue, man. She's great.
That's funny.
I really just think it's a no-brainer that Schreff is the guy for us. I mean, this guy, not only does he help at two positions, if you put him at tackle, you put Pugh at guard. I mean, but then the guy helps in the run game, and then he helps in the passing game. So this guy is helping out in four positions, because now if the run game is stout, now you cannot double team back him like you want to. You got to bring the safeties in, and you got to bring the corners in to fill the box. I mean, guys, am I way off with this, or is that what Paulie's out you're thinking too?
Well, Joey, and look at it this way too. You bring a guy like Sheriff in here, if that ends up being the pick, he pushes a guy like Pew to become better. There's a competition then between those two guys, and that also helps things.
There's such a domino effect here by improving the offensive line. That's why it all begins in the trenches, John. Football 101, you know, I'm old school. That's just the way it is.
How many times you said old school, Tim?
I love it. I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, let me say this, okay? Let me make something very, very, very clear here. And you saw me on the draft board with John during that segment. When Sheriff came off the board, I went to the corner because Trey Waynes is a top 10 value in my mind. This guy is a cover corner, and you can never go wrong taking an extra cover corner in the top 10 picks of the draft. So don't think automatically, and please tell your daughter this. You know what? I made that pick in good conscience because I firmly believe that if Sheriff is gone, they should not push the second-rated offensive lineman, who in my mind is Leo Collins, up to number 9. Because when you push, you make a mistake. Never push. When the Giants have pushed in the past, they paid for it. You got to stick with your value board. And that's why I went with Waynes at corner. And I think a lot of people, when they probably saw John do that to me, they were thinking, well, he's going to just pick the next offensive lineman. Not the case, as you saw, because you need to stay true to value, and again, the thinking that a cover corner provides tremendous value.
Yeah, Paulie, and I totally agree with you. You know, and the other thing, I mean, I had one question, and I am not a fan of any of these hybrid guys. They do not fit our defense at all. The only question I have, and I haven't watched enough film on them myself or YouTube highlights, can any of these guys play outside linebacker for this team, and could any of these guys actually be good in coverage?
Yeah, Joey, here's the trick. You don't know because they haven't done it. The only guy, actually, and it's funny, that really has played a lot of coverage in college was Bud Dupree, who did it for Kentucky last year. And the ironic thing, he's one of the guys that actually has the size to play 4-3 defensive end. But Kentucky did him a favor, put him at linebacker last year, and actually let him cover a little bit, and he did okay with it.
Yeah.
At least he's been given the chance to do it. Ray's never covered. Gregory has shown maybe the athleticism to do it, but he's never been asked to actually cover anybody. Vic Beasley, again, athletically, you think you should be able to, but you could watch film all day long. You still wouldn't know because he was never asked to do it in college.
You know, here's the problem. If you're talking about a top 10 pick and the Giants are 9, as we've discussed,
projecting is a tough thing to do.
You don't want to take the risk of what they can do.
Well, because as a personnel guy said to me, okay, in those types of situations, the column is blank. You don't have a grade on that guy's ability because he didn't do it.
It's pure projection.
So if you're going to do that kind of projections, you better be 15, 16, 17, 22.
Second round.
Or second round. You can maybe project when you're there. Top 10, you need to be as sure as you can be in all areas of the guy you pick.
No, I agree, Pete Dotz. Guys, thank you so much for taking my call. And, Johnny, I got one for the board for you next year. This is my prediction. Eli, this year, 40 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. You guys have a great day, and I look forward to the draft, guys.
All right, Joey, it's going on the wall. I don't have a pen and paper in front of me right now. Paul, write that down for me. Eli Manning, 40 and 9.
Here we go.
You got it for me?
Wait a minute. Right. I got. Take that.
Okay. Thank you.
40?
He did say 40. It's a prediction.
Wow.
I like it. That would be a new single-season record for Eli, by the way. Looks like you're struggling to find a pen there. There we go. Of course, I'm not prepared. Who am I to talk? All right,
40
so we got
touchdowns.
Joey in Virginia.
Can I say something? Can I just say something right now? If Eli Manning has to throw that many times to get 40 touchdown passes, chances are it's not going to be a great season for the Giants.
Only 9 interceptions.
Well, that would be a great number.
That's phenomenal.
But the 40 touchdown passes would not be indicative of a team that has Andre Williams and Rashad Jennings and would like to try to get back to the running game. And if they improve that offensive line, they'll be able to get that power rushing attack going. That would mean that Eli should not be throwing that many times to compile 40 touchdown passes. So to me, that's an unbalanced offense that you're talking about. and would be a very dangerous thing if you're trying to make the playoffs.
All right, Joey, it's on the board. You're right below Charlie in Portland, Maine. And Charlie went 8-8 this year, by the way, a two-game improvement over last year when he actually hit 6-10 right on the nose.
Did he really?
Back in last March, he hit 6-10 right on the nose.
Again, before the draft and before free agency?
Was it before that? Yeah, it was on March 14th he hit it. It was right after free agency started.
Holy smokes. Well, I guess he knew all those injuries were going to happen.
Well, you know, Charlie. Good foresight. 201-939-4513. Vic's in Florida. Vic's been holding the longest. Victor?
Hey, good afternoon there, Paul and John.
Hi, guys.
I have a couple of questions and maybe a statement.
Sure. Give me your statement first and ask your questions.
I heard the press conference held by Jerry Reese the other day, and he said something about leaving all his options open, meaning that they might, you know, trade up or trade down. I mean, the Giants are at number 9. Why would they want to trade up? But number 9, you got a blue chipper anyway. And my prediction, it's either Sheriff or Shelton. You can mark that down somewhere, okay?
All right.
Now, my other question is to Paul, because he's an old-timer like me.
Okay.
In 1975,
yeah.
It's a trivia question.
Okay.
In 1975, the Giants traded their number one draft choice to the Cowboys.
Yeah, he became Randy White. It was the Craig Morton deal.
You hit it right on the nose, boy. I'll tell you. You're something else, Paul. Okay. And like I said, my prediction is either Sheriff or Shelton.
Thank you, Vic.
Thank you. Have a good day,
Appreciate
and
it.
We'll chat with you again later.
Thank you, my friend.
One thought about what he said about Jerry Reese. Jerry's got to say we'll be open to all phone calls and we'll be open to moving up and down because if he shuts the door, he's making a mistake.
What if the Texans call and say, hey, we'll give you J.J. Watt for the 9th pick? I mean, you're doing the trade.
You know,
it's not going to happen, but you're doing the trade.
You do your due diligence, and as we've said 1,000 times, John, in the last 2 months, in the top 10, there's going to be a lot of phones ringing. There's going to be a lot of phone calls.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how many deals are going to happen, but there's going to be a lot of buzz going through those phone lines in Chicago on Thursday
night.
Well,
I'll tell you what. Let's say, for example, the Giants get to 9, and somehow Kevin White's on the board. There's going to be a team looking for a big-time wide receiver
without
that's
going
to want to trade up and get that pick. Now, maybe the Giants pick him themselves, and he's that high on their board. Maybe that happens. Who knows? But there will be people that are calling up to get that pick, depending on who's there.
There's no question. And so then Jerry's going to have to decide what to do. Now, I do tend to agree with Vic. I think the odds of Jerry moving up are much, much, much more of a long shot than him moving back.
See, now, my thing about this, too, is that, and this goes back to the pass rush we talked about at the top of the show, I don't think Ray and Gregory are going to fall that much because there's such a large drop-off from the top-tier pass rushers to me to that second tier of pass rushers. So I think teams are so desperate for sacks, those guys will still go mid to early 20s first round, in my opinion, because of the drop-off.
Well, again, though, if they're going to go mid to early 20s, that's a lot lower than a month ago when people thought they'd be top 12.
Well, I meant mid in terms of like 15 to 20
Early
20, somewhere between 15 and 25.
Okay,
I think they'll still
in the mid-third, so to speak.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Second, third of the draft.
And I think that's probably logical and probably still going to be the case because, as you know, teams are just so desperate for the talent, they tend to overlook some of the
other
things.
I'll tell you what, some teams at the end of that first round, and one team in the Giants division, the Cowboys being one of them, one of those pass rushers get to them, even though they play 4-3, if they're there for them at 27, that's the time where you take a chance on a guy like that and you try to convert him just because they have that much talent.
Well, and there's no question, too. The other thing you have to remember is that right now, when you're looking at 3-4s and 4-3s, teams are not going to be real anxious to all of a sudden change what their scheme is going to be now based on getting their draft choice.
Oh, no, they're not going to change their scheme. They're going to have to figure a way to fit the player into their scheme.
So that says, guys who are 4-3 base teams like the Giants with Steve Spagnuolo, you're going to shy away from those tweeners. So how many of those tweeners are going to wind up picking in certain areas that's going to push the tweeners down?
Now, look, for example, I know, for example, Chip Kelly probably wants to get a wide receiver early in this draft to make up for the loss of Jeremy Maclin.
Right.
But you don't think their 3-4 defense can use a stand-up pass rusher on the outside to get to the quarterback?
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying.
201-939-4513. Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland. He's been holding the longest. Shakes.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, bud? How are you, man? You getting psyched? You been pumped? You ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready to go, man. But I wanted to speak on something real quick.
Sure.
I don't know if y'all have been watching the news, but there's a lot of riots going on in my city.
Yeah, by the way, Shakes, I hope you and yours are safe down there, my friend.
Yeah, we okay.
Good.
We're
safe in the house and everything.
Excellent.
And it's really, we over east, and it's really going, it's really worse over west.
Right.
It's going down over here, too, but over west is terrible. And I just wanted to just say about that, you know, I don't want to get too political on your show, but this has been brewing for a long time, and something has to change. Something has to change, and we deserve justice. So I'm just going to say that on that, man.
Okay, but hopefully we – hopefully at the same time
– our city,
right.
It's terrible.
Right.
It's just terrible. Because now we're going to have to pay for that through the taxes and everything.
Right.
It's just –
oh,
everything
sure.
is just horrible right now.
Well, yeah, Shakes, the way I look at it, look, I don't want to get into the politics either. If you want change, there are ways to go about getting change. Burning down buildings and injuring people usually aren't the best way to promote change. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yep, yep. I don't like the violence and the vandalism.
Yep. All right, what do you got on football here, Shakes?
No doubt. Well, before I go on to football, though, I wanted to say I sent y'all out a tweet. You too, P. Dot. I sent y'all out a tweet about the anniversary show later on at 4 o'clock.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Year, so.
Thank you.
Y'all check that out. No problem. Like I said, y'all all invited. And then I wanted to explain Charlie because y'all say he went 8-8 and he came on a shakedown and said the same thing. And I wanted to explain why he said that, because last year he went 6-10 is because we don't do anything in free agency. And last year we did stuff in free agency, but in Charlie's eyes, not in my eyes, but in Charlie's eyes, we didn't do enough. We didn't do the right moves enough to he wanted defensive linemen. He wanted more offensive linemen, better offensive linemen than what was that guy, Brown?
Well, last year they drafted
Charlie
Richburg
Brown.
In the second round.
Yeah, they drafted Richburg. They brought in John Jerry. They brought in Charlie Brown.
Yeah, Charlie Brown. Like he felt like they should have brought in more guys in free agency, and he thinks the same thing about this offseason. They didn't address things in free agency. That's why he said 8-8. Just explaining Charlie's mental. All right, and I wanted to just speak on the draft real
yeah.
quick.
Sure.
Fifth round, sixth round. I like what y'all was talking about with the guy earlier about tight ends, because Danelle, I don't see that he can be a blocking tight end. I like what he brings to the table as a receiver and everything else. We can use him for a lot of different things. But I want a blocking tight end to groom along with him for these years to come. So fifth and sixth round, I love the kid Nick Boyle out of Delaware. So, John, add him to my list of players, man. Nick Boyle, Delaware.
Got it.
All right. Thanks for taking my call, y'all.
Thank you, Shakes.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you later. Appreciate it, my friend.
Boyle's an interesting guy because you'd have to, you know, jump up from the 1AA level or what was known as the FCS level.
6'4", 268, ran a 5.40-yard dash at the Combine. Four-year senior, and Dane Brugler has him going fifth or sixth round of the draft.
Yeah, I had him as an undrafted rookie free agent guy to look at. The comments I made on him, smooth was one of my big positives. But in terms of question, this is a guy who is about 268 pounds, John. Is that what you have listed?
I got 268, and he, by the way, went to Alabama first before he wound up in Delaware.
Correct. And my problem with him is that I put here run blocking to his frame. For a guy of that size, okay, and he's got some beef on him because he's only 6'4", 268. So that gives you some really good body structure to work with. He should be a more powerful blocker, especially when you're at the FCS level. You need to show the ability to dominate at that level as a blocker. So my question is, when he makes the jump up to the NFL level, will he show enough power and physicality at this high level to become the solid blocking tight end that I think he can be? He's got the potential, but to me, he's going to have to show his full potential in order to equate to the value that I think he can be. I think that Vogler is already there. And that's why I probably would tend to look at him a little quicker.
And the reason I like Vogler, too, is that he played almost primarily on the line of scrimmage, which is what the Giants wanted. Well, generally what the Giants want to do with their tight ends. We'll see how they move the tight end around this year in the second year of Ben McAdoo's
Vogler
system.
I sold you on Vogler. You like him now.
I think as a late-round pick, he'd be a guy that you can invest in as a guy that can block a little bit. I got no problem
cool,
with that.
Cool.
Hey, I've been a proponent of bringing in a blocking tight end all offseason.
Okay.
You know that.
Just make it
and
sure.
And I think that's an excellent day three pick you can make. You bring in a guy, he can fill a role, he can step in, play that role on day one, he can be on your protection teams on specials, whether it's punt or field goal, he'll play a couple different roles, he can do all those different things.
See, the thing that I like about Vogler more than Boyle is that he's already playing at the highest of levels,
right,
and he has shown that he has the physicality and the power and the strength to be a premier blocker at that level. There's not as much of a projection there, although Boyle's a better receiver at this particular time, more smooth in the passing game than Vogler is.
You know, he mentioned Pyerman from Ohio State. Dane Brugler has him as a third rounder. He really likes him. He didn't play football until high school, so he's still a little bit raw. He has starting potential down the road, even though his production wasn't great at Ohio State. But he's a guy, too, that maybe would probably have to be a little bit of a higher pick maybe on day number three. But he's a guy you might be able to get around number four.
Has a foot injury history.
Right, that's correct.
Okay, so that's something you want to take into account. One thing that I've been told by personnel guys in the past, and it strictly comes down to what your medical people tell you, John. You know this at the combines.
Guys can be on or off your board based on that
sort of
stuff.
They can wipe guys off. Now, what I've been told is if there's a minor injury history in the guy's past, and your physicians and trainers and medical staff say, you know what, this isn't that big a deal, it's not an issue, it doesn't really worry us, or it's something really tiny and we think we can fix it right away for you. What I've been told on average, those kinds of guys will drop half a round. Okay? You got to devalue them by about half a round. And that is only if it's considered something that's a minor history in his background. So take that into consideration when you're talking about the Ohio State kid.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Anthony in Brooklyn up next. Anthony, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Anthony. What's going on?
Hey. Let me make sure I'm not on the speaker. Not much. Listen, first of all, thanks, guys, for doing this. This is great, and I'm so excited. I'm actually had a little bit of a quarrel with my girlfriend. You're going to think I'm nuts, but tomorrow I'm going to Turks and Caicos, and I'm very unhappy.
I'm sure you can find NFL Network or ESPN down there, no?
On a computer, right?
Yeah, I know. I already made a deal with her that I'm watching the first round, so she's going to find something to do. But I don't think I've ever missed a draft, and I used to go to the Roosevelt Hotel when I was a kid with my uncle, and I don't really go now, or I haven't gone in a long time, but my friends think I'm nuts. Like, well, I'll miss playing golf on a beautiful Friday because I got to watch the third round.
Well,
or
Anthony,
like that or whatever.
Anyway, I will give you some
about free agency. Okay. I've been listening the whole while. I know that's been talked about, but real quick, I know that Paul always talks about cracks and holes and stuff like this, but I'm really a little disappointed what Jerry did with the free agency, and just in the respect of not filling at least one of the holes. I don't think you can go into the draft without using free agency to fill some of the holes. I mean, the draft is more of a crapshoot. I mean, ideally, you want to build your team by the draft. I understand that. But the Giants had too many holes not to at least fill one or two, I would say at least one of the major holes in free agency. And I think they're kind of hamstrung now where you might have to take a player that you might not have taken in this situation. So that's just a comment. Question, does Jerry Reese have to do that that press conference every year? Is that a requirement by the NFL?
You know what? I'm not sure if it's a requirement by the NFL. I know every general manager does it. It's something the Giants have always done here. I'm not sure if it's an NFL requirement, but it is certainly something that he has always done.
Yeah, I think he should stop doing it. If he's not required to do it, because
why
it's
is that?
Truly a waste of time. I mean, I don't blame him for not answering some of the questions because, obviously he's not going
to
do it.
you really wanted to give him the pick.
I listen to whatever he's trying to, not to get information, because I understand he's not going to answer some of the questions, but he could frame it in such a way where it's somewhat interesting anyway. That's just one comment on that. As far as the draft poll, I kind of agree with you on Sheriff. I'm a little nervous about it. If they do get a chance to pick him, I think I was watching one of the draft shows the other day, the look-back shows, Robert Gallery.
Yeah.
as he was, you know, going to be a left tackle, and then he turned out to be a decent guard.
Well, he was injured a lot, too.
And I know you always look at Zach Martin, and, you know, Zach Martin's a great player. But, you know, I'd say Joe Bitonio is every bit the player Zach Martin is. And your friends at Pro Football Focus actually rated Bitonio higher, and they picked him in the second round. So a little nervous about picking him at that ninth spot. I would be more apt to want to trade out, obviously not too far, try to get a third-round pick. This draft is deep enough in those rounds, as you guys just talked about, and we have enough holes where if we can get an extra pick and still get either a decent offensive lineman or somebody else who they value with that first pick, but get an extra third pick, I think that would be the way to go. What do you guys think about that?
Well, as I've said before, I think if the Giants move down, to me, anywhere past 13, 14, you're asking for trouble because there's going to be a run on offensive linemen there. You certainly think that you need to add depth along the offensive line. If you do that, basically, in my mind, then you're going to wind up going offensive lineman in the second round.
Right.
And you're going to go somewhere else in round number one because there's going to be a run there if you drop down too far in the first round.
And remember, Anthony, finding a guy like Joel Bitonio, a guy of that quality in the second round, isn't a gimme. I mean, that's something.
Absolutely, yeah. He was early second round as well. I was crying for the Giants to pick him in the second round, but he was taken about four or five spots before they picked. I do agree with you. But listen, I agree with 99% of what everybody says because everybody makes valid points. There's not a lot of right or wrong here in terms of what you do.
Right.
You know, if Sheriff's not there, okay, and I know you love him, Paul, we talked about the cornerback. You guys talked about the cornerback earlier, which some guy was on the phone the other day on your program, kind of scared me a little bit on him. But certainly, I have no problem taking a top cornerback in that position. Question is he worth it? Is he the guy? I know he's the highest ranked cornerback because the guy in Washington is, has his problems. To me, it's just that if you go to 14 and get a lineman, if that's what you feel like you need in that position, and get that extra pick, you know, that's the way to go. But Paul, if Sheriff is not there, who do you take? Who would you like in that spot if you don't want to trade to, say, 15 or 16, if you couldn't get a 13 or 14 pick?
I made it clear, and I know it's on Giants.com. John took Sheriff off the board when he asked me to do the mock draft for the website, and I took Trey Waynes. And I'm very firm on that. Sheriff is my guy if he's there. Waynes is my guy if Sheriff's not there. And those are the top two guys in my cluster. Now, you're going to ask me to go deeper than that? I'm not going to give you that answer today. I'm on the show again Wednesday and Thursday. We'll talk about that more then. But there's
like
no doubt.
I mean, listen, I like the position. I don't have any issue with the position. If Waynes is the guy and you believe he's the guy, I have no problem with that pick at all. One last thing, Shaq Thompson, I'm pretty high on this guy. I know that, you know, he might be a tweener, not in the sense that we talk about as far as linemen go. But, you know, I was watching a bunch of shows and listening to different people. And in terms of making plays and picking a guy who's a playmaker, to me, I mean, if they get a chance, I don't think they'll get a chance in the third. I think he'd be gone by then. You know, it's too bad we have so many needs because if he was available in the second round and we didn't have to pick either an offensive lineman or a safety at that point, and he might be able to play safety, although I know he wants to play linebacker, I think he is going to be a tremendous player.
Thank you, Anthony.
That's all. I really appreciate guys taking a phone call. I'll be listening and watching from the beach. Don't get offended. And maybe if it rains a couple of days or nights, I won't be upset either.
Yeah, Anthony, I want to remind you, we'll be streaming our Thursday. You can put your phone down.
I'm just trying to make sure he sees.
You can stream our Thursday night show. It'll be Bob Papa, Carl Banks, and David Deal on MSG, also on Giants.com, breaking down the Giants draft picks as they happen, and on the Giants app on your phone as well. So you can check that out for sure on Thursday night down there in Turks and Caicos. Come back with the 10. Have a great time. And when
I know the Giants will not take him, but I believe that really, apart from the tackle from USC, who I think is a top 10 pick, in terms of I think Gurley is a top 10 pick. I think he's only one of the few guys that are a top 10 pick, maybe even a top 5 pick. Now, I understand he's got some injury issues, and that's a big deal. It's almost a shame that the Giants aren't picking later because I feel if you can get a guy like that around 20, that could be the steal of the draft. Just an observation, that's all.
Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate it. Gurley, I think if he's healthy, I think he's probably a minimum top 15 pick. He could sneak into the top 10. It seems like the more people watch him, the more people like him. But running back coming off an ACL injury, we know about how you can kind of plug and play in that position a little bit. I think he'll probably be off the board between 15 and 20. Would be my guess if I had to make one.
I think that's a logical statement, John. I think the only other thing I would add about that is there are a lot of second and third round running backs in this draft.
There are, yes.
A lot.
You can go to fourth or fifth even.
And for that reason, you combine that with the injury history, he may slip down a few more spots than one might think, because some of these teams who really want him back may just say, you know what, I really can get one in the second round, and the drop-off maybe isn't as much as you think it might be,
right,
and they would pass.
Derek in Atlanta's up next at 201-939-4513. Another 60 minutes of Giants talk right here on Giants.com. Derek, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Doing well, Derek.
Hey, so, you know, I'm just going to say it's getting closer to the draft, and I know you guys are already, you know, especially PDOT, kind of locked into Sheriff. I'm not really – I am so scared that we're going to pick Sheriff for the wrong reasons, that it's like if he – he is, I don't think the person, if it's another draft, he's not there. He's not at number nine. He's not projected number nine. And
why?
Out of college, because out of college, when you go back and you, before the combine, you cut the combine off, you break these guys and everything. And we're talking about, we need a tackle. The players that we're talking about were Eric Flowers and Lyle Collins and all this other stuff. Sheriff was a nice run blocker, a nice guard.
Dominant run blocker. Dominant run blocker.
Powerful.
And he also played left.
He is, I must admit, as a run blocker, he is dominant. Okay, but he is a guard. And I think our need so much, we need the position so much that we're going to push him up.
Derek, hold on 1 second. I want to just throw a few things at you before you move on here. Number one, I've talked to probably 8 or 9 different draft people, including former scouts. Every single one of those people have Sheriff in their top 10 overall players. That's number one. Number two, in this press conference last Thursday, Jerry said they see Sheriff as both a guard and a tackle. So they believe he can play out there at tackle. Number three, and I think this is probably why Pro Football Focus doesn't have Sheriff ranked as high as some other people do. They only grade the 2014 tape. After the second week of this season in college football, Sheriff had arthroscopic knee surgery. He did not miss one game. But there is no question from scouts that watched him as a junior and as a senior that that knee injury affected his ability to slide left and right over the course of the season. So, while maybe because of his arm length.
Maybe it was his broken leg the year before that, and maybe it was something else. But, I mean, he has an injury history. I mean, he
didn't miss a game his last two seasons.
I mean, he is a run blocker. He is a guard. He's a true guard.
If he's such a powerful run blocker, that's why he's a perfect fit to play right tackle in the National Football League.
We need a
which is where the Giants should play him after they pick him.
Eric Flowers, and not going on what I'm saying.
Who, by the way, has a knee issue.
Eric Flowers, okay? DJ
Eric Flowers has a knee issue. You know that, right?
Tackles in this NFL.
You know that.
Well, but first of all, number two. Long term, if Eric Flowers can get his technique issues together, might he be a better long term tackle than Brandon Sheriff? Yes, I think there's a chance at that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's very little chance of him stepping in week one in 2015 and being a better offensive tackle than Brandon Sheriff in week number one.
Therein lies the reason why we're taking Brandon Sheriff. We're not taking the best player because Eric Flowers is a better tackle.
Not right now, he's not.
Eric Flowers is a younger tackle.
Not right now, he's not better.
Eric Flowers has a better upside.
See, you need to identify value a lot better than you are, sir, because the Giants need a power.
Less tackles, which we'll need in a year or so.
The Giants need to improve their power running game. And the guy who is the most dominant, most powerful, most physical, and by far best run blocker of all the offensive linemen in this draft, which would improve this team dramatically, is Mr. Sheriff.
Exactly.
You need to understand what the word value means.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, Peter, is that we're taking the guy just because we have a need and he fits the need.
No, listen.
He's not the actual. If it was the thing about it is Todd Gurley is the best running back in this draft, but we don't need him right now. We got a couple of running backs that's pretty good on our offense, but Todd Gurley is obviously a lot better runner, you know. So we're projecting need,
No, but Derek, hold on. I've talked to almost a dozen now people that do this for a living. It's their jobs. I haven't seen one of those dozen people have Eric Flowers rated ahead of Brandon Scherff on their big board. Not one. And I think only one or two of the 12 has Flowers as their second best offensive lineman.
I mean, I don't know. You know, maybe, you know, I can't speak to that. I've listened to a lot of your shows, and I've heard those guys talk about these players. But I also looked at other mock drafts and other people who predict the draft. And some of them are projecting Eric Flowers as being the number one player, Derek, projecting Lyle Collins, and that's the problem because they're all bunched together. If he came out last year, you can't tell me he would project above where he's at. He'll probably be down. Brandon Scherff will probably be down in the 20s.
Give me a timeout here. I want you to answer one question for me. You're making a big deal about Sheriff's arthroscopic knee surgery, which forced him only to miss one practice.
I didn't say anything about knee surgery. I said about his broken leg, and I said about his 23.
Well, okay, but you're talking injuries about him, yet Flowers has a bum knee. Humphreys has a bad ankle and a bad knee, right, at least according to the combine physicals that came back from the league, okay? This stuff is legitimately documented.
He has a broken leg 1 year. The next year he has micro surgery.
What I'm saying to you is this.
The next year he can't run it on in combine.
You're ignoring their injuries and trying to project them up with Scherff. You can't do that. You can't do that.
Combined with 23 reps tells me that you should be falling in the draft. You're not supposed to be projecting in the top 10.
I'm done. There's no sense in even discussing this anymore.
Well, we're done with that, okay?
And
so we can move on with that. Well, I'm not going to change your mind on that. We know that. And I already knew that when I called in.
We're
not going to change anybody's mind. I'm just giving you my opinion.
No, I hear you, Derek. Okay. It's all good, babe.
Okay. So just before we go, I wanted to know about if Vic Beasley came out last year, where would he be in those with those other, projected Khalil Mack and D. Ford and – County, where would you say he would be projected?
I think he would
group of players.
I don't think he's on the level of Khalil Mack. I don't think he's on the level of Clowney. I think he would be with that second tier of guys. If you want to look at last year's draft class,
probably.
I would put him somewhere in that area with the D Fords. I'm trying to think of the other guys that went in the mid to late first round last year that were pass rushers. I would have to look it up, but I think that's where he slits in. All right, Derek.
Okay, I'll talk to you guys later.
Hey, good stuff, man. Thanks for the call. Hey, look, and Derek, we disagree. That's great. We're not trying to shout you down or anything, but I just haven't seen a lot of people that watch a lot more tape than I do, watch more tape than Paul do, that has Flowers rated as a better prospect than Scherff. I don't see it a whole lot. Now, do I think – look, there is a lot of positive things to say about Eric Flowers, okay? He did 37 reps in the bench press. He's very powerful.
No
he's 6'6", he's 329 pounds, he's 34.5-inch arms. Those are all very good numbers for a potential tackle in the National Football League. I think he can be a right tackle. I think he can move over and play left tackle at some point if he gets his technique issues together. But at this point, in my opinion, from what I've seen and from what I've talked to people, and again, these are like former offensive linemen that have watched this guy in tape, he still has some issues with technique. He's a little sloppy sometimes, and he's not nearly as precise and consistent in what he does as Brandon Scherff. And that's why I think Scherff is the better pick. And again, you say he's a guard. Do I know he's not going to be the Giants starting right tackle in week one and Pugh's going to be the left guard? I don't know that. I think it's a 50-50 proposition if he's their left guard or if he's their right tackle, if they do, in fact, make that pick. I still think that's going to be a competition and something the Giants will figure out once he gets here. That's just my opinion.
Part of the value component or quotient that you have to consider is how close is the guy being to being an immediate producer. In other words, you want to talk plug and play, you want to talk pro-ready, use the term that you like. Scherff is the most pro-ready of any of the offensive linemen in the draft. Every single one of the other offensive linemen have a little bit of polishing to do to become a plug-and-play guy. And that's not saying that these guys stink. We're not saying that they're third-day picks or they're undrafted rookie free agents.
No,
we're not saying that.
And if Scherff's not on the board, Eric Flowers would certainly be in my conversation for the Giants pick. Absolutely.
So what you have to understand is there is a level of elbow grease that's going to have to be applied to the other offensive lineman once you take Scherff off the board. And it's like, well, how much elbow grease do you want to apply to a guy you're picking ninth overall in the draft? So that's part of the value component that I don't think you're taking into account. The injury factor that I didn't like you arguing for is that you were ignoring the fact that these other two guys have documented injuries too. So if you're going to complain about Sheriff's injuries, you have to mention the other documented injuries that the other players have had. Now, how the medical staff has evaluated them, that's not anything we know.
And I think I like the intangible stuff from Sheriff a lot, too.
Well,
tough.
Again,
blue collar,
missed the practice.
Knee
that's
streak.
It.
Had arthroscopic knee surgery. Missed one practice. You don't think Tom Coughlin's salivating all over his desk over a guy that's willing to fight through injuries?
No question. And then the other thing you have to understand, too, and I know that, you know, we talk about the need-value quotient. The truth of the matter is, when you talk about value for a player, one of the components has to be, John, how is it that he's going to be used in your system?
Right.
Because a player is not as valuable to you if you're not going to use the best traits that he brings to the table.
And I'm telling you right now, I'm not as anxious in line as everybody else here, Paul, to get Will Beattie's replacement ready.
I agree with you.
If you go back, I tell you what, guys.
He had a good 2015 season.
And if you look at his contract compared to other left tackles in the league, it's darn reasonable. You don't want to hear it. I understand that. But it's darn reasonable.
I've got no problem with Will Beattie duplicating his season last year and saying the Giants would be satisfied with that this year. You always want to get better.
Yeah.
But he had an okay season last year. He was not the problem. In fact, I think he graded out unofficially the highest of any or the most consistent of any of the Giants' offensive line
last year.
Yeah,
he was ranked as like the 14th or 15th best tackle in the NFL, left together.
And that's fine. I have absolutely no problem with
And paying
with
a guy
that.
Like that, what is it, $7, $8 million a year, whatever he's making? That's extremely reasonable. Look what Brian Bulaga got in free agency. He's not even a left tackle.
So, you know, when you're talking about a guy's skill set and then what is it that you're going to ask him to do, well, you're going to ask the offensive lineman that the Giants bring in here, if they bring one in, you're going to ask this guy to become a power run blocker because that's the area of their offense that needs to be improved.
Was the pass protection perfect last year? No, but it was
good enough.
It was above average.
Good enough to have Eli have an outstanding season.
Absolutely. For the most part, look, they had a couple shaky games here or there. We all know that. But for the most part, they were pretty good over the course
of
the year.
Okay, so that means the O-lineman that they bring in, and I know you can, in a way it's confusing the whole need-value thing, but again, part of the value is you're asking the player to give you the best that he's got. And you're saying, this is how we're going to use you. We need you to do this as well as you can do it because we want to be able to execute the way we want to execute. And there's no doubt in my mind that Sheriff does that.
And I think number two, you take risk into that equation. While Eric Flowers has all these great numbers, and again, there's a lot I love about the kid. 6'6", bench press 37 reps at the combine at 225.
That's
great.
Short and sweet. His skill set's good.
Right. But is there a chance he doesn't develop the skills he needs to develop to become a Pro Bowl caliber tackle? There's a chance of that. I think the risk factor with Sheriff is infinitesimal. Now, injuries can happen. You never know. You can't predict those. What can you do? The guy gets hurt. He gets rolled in practice. That's nobody's fault.
It happens.
But I feel like there are so few holes in his game where theoretically, even if some of the people out there are right and he doesn't fit in at tackle and he struggles there, all right, you already have a solution. You move him to guard, he could be a Pro Bowl caliber guard. So to me, there's always a solution there to have him fit, and the risk is so low. I would rather have somebody that mitigates that risk a lot than to go with someone that has a higher bust factor but maybe a slightly higher. See, here's the thing. I think a guy like Flowers, for example, has a significantly higher bust factor but only a slightly higher breakout factor.
It's that whole risk-reward thing.
Exactly. And that's how I look at it. 201-939-4513. We're going until 2 on Giants.com. Well, Charlie in Portland, Maine, already had Shakes defending him, so I'll go to him, let him talk for himself now. Charlie, what's going on?
Hey, John. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Shakes. Thanks a lot, man. Picking up my flag. Hey, I just got a couple of questions. One is, like, we already got 79 players on the roster, and we're going to pick 8 draft choices. So that makes, not too much room for undrafted free agents. So I'm assuming we're going to be jettisoning a bunch of players. And I'm just kind of wondering who that may be.
Well, a lot's going to depend on the position of the undrafted free agents they want to bring in. I mean, come on. Yeah. You're not going to get rid of a corner if you're bringing in three tight ends. Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying they're going to have to get rid of some people.
In all likelihood.
They're going to have room for three undrafted free agents. I think they're going to probably bring in more than that.
Well, you'd like to think that they're going to be able to scour those prospects and come up with some guys who they think can make the 53. Remember now, and again, we say this 1,000 times in the last few months, it's all about improving every single spot on the roster's 53. You got to improve spots 50, 51, and 52, just like you want to improve spot 15, 16, and 17.
Yeah, and just a quick thing about the offensive line you guys are talking about. I just think we need – I just don't think Pugh is going to be a great right tackle. So I really think we need to move him into guard where he'll probably be a really good guard. And if Sheriff can play right tackle, I'm all in for it. But we need a right tackle. So, I mean, if he can do it, if you, Paul, you think he can do it, that would be fine with me.
Well, you know what? I'm not positive, Charlie. I'm not absolutely 100% sure positive. But I think – that even day one this year in week one, I think there's a better chance that Sheriff is the best right tackle in this draft than almost any other player that will get drafted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, Pugh himself said he'd be very happy to have
Sheriff
on the team, and he would gladly move to guard because he said he likes the way the kid plays, and that's the kind of guy he wants to play alongside. So that's an endorsement from Pugh, who himself may wind up getting shifted because this rookie could be here. So what does that tell you about him?
Yeah, that's fine with me. If he's the best right tackle, that's great. The only other thing I got is that if Jerry Reese ends up picking a defensive end, a pass rusher or a cornerback, that tells me that JPP might not be around next year or Prince might not be around. I mean, if we take one of those at 9 – even if one of the tackles are there or one of the O-lines are there, then that tells me that they don't think JPP or Prince would be around.
Though, Charlie, remember this, though. It is up to the Giants. You can franchise Jason Pierre-Paul second year if you so choose, and you can also slap the franchise tag on Prince.
A transition tag, too.
That you can slap on him. So if the Giants definitely want those two guys back here next year, they'll be here. But look, is there a chance, considering their contract situation, that neither guy is here in 2016 or one or the other? Sure, there's a chance.
The point is there are mechanisms that they can use to try to enhance their chances of keeping them. That's what John's really trying to say. And, I'll tell you something else. If you're already thinking about opening day next year, you're really way ahead of the game because we got a lot to worry about in the next few months.
Oh, I know. I hope the only thing I hope is that we move up and get Williams because I think he's the best player in the draft. I think he's the next Reggie White or close to it. And I hope he falls a little so we can grab him. But anyway, thanks for being on for a couple hours, and we'll catch you in the next couple of days.
Thanks, Charlie. Hope all is well, my friend.
Okay, thank you.
Take it easy.
John Williams is not getting a 9.
No. Well, he wants to move up.
Yeah, well, I don't think so. Williams isn't getting out of the top 3, I don't think.
He's not getting by Oakland. From what I understand, Oakland loves the kid. So he's not going to get past Oakland at 4.
Yeah. So
I think one of the pivot points of this draft is actually the 3rd pick. I'm not sure where the Jaguars are going to go. I could see them picking a wide receiver, Cooper, or I could see them picking Dante Fowler if he's still there. Or Leonard Williams if he's still on the board, depending on what happens at number 2.
See, to me, the top 2 are even more in flux because we don't know. Everybody thinks the Bucs are going to take Winston, but, there's still that chance that somebody winds up making a deal with them.
I'm assuming the top two quarterbacks will go 1 and 2, regardless.
You think?
Yes.
You see, does Tennessee make the deal for Rivers? That changes the whole thing.
I think Tennessee would make the deal in a second. I'm not sure the Chargers are going to make that deal.
Okay. But see, that
that's a gutsy move. If you're the Chargers, that is a gutsy, gutsy, gutsy move to trade a franchise quarterback for a draft pick. It's gutsy. Very gutsy.
I'm understanding that. But, if they really believe that Rivers isn't going to make any kind of move with the franchise.
Well, that's the thing. The only way you make the deal is if Rivers tells them, I'm not going to L.A.
And that seems to still be an issue with him. And, again, it's part of the equation, John. We still don't know if the Chargers financially, if they want to make the kind of commitment that the Steelers made to Big Ben. Because, he's going to want ballpark numbers there. Well, that's the other part to this.
Big Ben has set the market. It's absolutely true.
So
for all the guys in that draft class.
There are two strong reasons why the Chargers may feel they need to make a trade there.
By the way, I have my top 10 big board that I promised.
Which we want to do that. I think we should get your top 10 big boards today. Lance and I are on tomorrow.
Okay.
You know, I know Anita's in Chicago, but I'll get her top 10. And we'll all give you our top 10s, and then we'll have some fun with that.
All right. Let's go back to the calls for now. Everybody's still holding. I want to make sure we get to everybody that's been on the line the longest. I think Len is up next in Maryland. Leonard, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing great, Len. How are you?
Actually, it's afternoon, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Len, before you start, did you look at our value board for the Giants' top 10 value picks in draft history? I know that's something you probably had a good time watching.
Well, you know, I haven't gotten to it yet. I got three or four things written down on my pad that I want to get to, but I haven't gotten to that yet. But thanks for the tip, Paul.
It's good stuff.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Listen, just real quick, boy, you could hear the emotion in Shake's voice this morning.
Yeah,
I don't live in the city, but you know, I'm in the suburbs there, and it's a bad thing, and I know Shakes is feeling it. He's a smart guy, and
yeah.
He's got his pulse on what's going on there. You know, I want to talk about Michael Cox.
We didn't mention that, by the way, did we?
We did not, and that's probably why we haven't heard from Steve either. Steve is probably crying in his cereal somewhere this morning.
Let's catch
Noah's
up.
Noah's a bigger Michael Cox fan than Steve.
He just got cut yesterday.
Yes.
Cox,
yeah,
who broke his
cut.
Leg at the end of last season with about a month or so to go, was cut yesterday. Kid out of UMass, always had a smile on his face, great attitude.
Yes.
Had some skills. Really, I liked him as a kickoff returner.
Seventh round pick, right?
Yeah. Liked him as a kickoff returner more than anything else. Good guy, though. Real, real fun, happy-go-lucky guy. And I personally wish him well.
I think it shows what the team thinks of Orleans Darkwa. I guess they think he could really be a contributor here.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Len. What I wanted to say about Michael Cox, I want to be more specific, Paul, than you just were. It happened in the Seattle game.
Yes.
And, you know, if there's one thing that's going to drive me away from this game, drive me away from this wonderful game that I've committed all these years and all this money to and all this time listening to you guys, it's going to be the injuries that come from the viciousness. You look back at that tackle. That was an unnecessary tackle. The man went through Cox's legs. He went low. Cox had his back to him catching a pass. And the guy drilled him in the back behind his knees. Very unlike what Pete Carroll teaches at Seattle. But, you know, if there's anything that's going to drive me away from this game, it's the viciousness of those kinds of plays. All right, listen, let me get that. I got that off my chest.
Okay.
And, you know, good luck to Michael. I think probably the dream is over. And that was a severe injury that's going to be awfully tough to come back from. All right, look, I got tunnel vision on this draft, guys. You probably know it. I've been talking about it for 3 months. I want to go offense, protect your biggest asset, Eli. I'm zeroed in on the offensive line. I'm zeroed in on offensive guard. You know, look, we're 6-10, coming off of 7-11. There's a hole there. We got to get a fifth offensive lineman. I want a clean player, free of major injury in the last year, free of off-field junk. I want a plug-in guy. You know, I want him, you know, Sunday night, September 13th in Dallas. I want this guy on the field. I want him on the field for three downs on the offensive side of the ball. I like seniors. I like graduates.
Where are you going, Len?
They're finishers. They're quick learners. They can communicate. It better be Scherf, Pete, or Collins. I'm not going to get picky. Not going to get picky. I prefer to leave Pugh at tackle, which says I prefer Scherf or Collins, who will slide the guard, because Pete isn't that guy.
Pete is not a guard.
He's got to be any one of those three guys. Jerry, make it happen. Hey, listen, we probably won't talk till after the draft. Have fun. This is a great time of year.
Thanks, Len.
Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it, Len.
I think the one thing about those three players that he mentioned, and it is very clear that I have not seen anybody who thinks that Pete can be a guard. His body type does not fit.
I would slide Flowers into that group, too.
Yeah, you could put him there. And I'll tell you what. I've got some feelers out on Oregon's Jake Fisher. To me, he is a high second-round value who needs a little bit more bulk and a little bit more power and beef to be a right tackle in the NFL. But I do think that if you're going to go down to that next level, if the Giants potentially are looking for a second-round offensive lineman, Fisher would be a guy I'd strongly look at. He's got a lot of athleticism.
What do you think of T.J. Clemmings out of Pittsburgh? That's someone we haven't talked a whole lot about on
the show.
Stress
fracture that has now come out in his foot, which, again, goes back to that injury thing we talked about.
And feet injuries, big guys, is always dangerous.
Of course it is, because of the weight they carry, right. John. He's also going to have to be coached up. Significant elbow grease and polish going to be needed, John.
Yeah, because he only moved to the offensive line as a junior. He's only played 2 years as an offensive lineman.
Defensive tackle who made the conversion. He's going to have a lot of work to do. Now, long term, people say he's got the frame. He's got the skill set. Yep. He's got the attitude that long term he could be a very good offensive lineman in this league for years to come.
And he's from your hometown.
Well, he's a Teaneck guy.
Yeah.
Not necessarily my hometown, but close enough.
Oh, it's right next door.
But here's the thing.
Come on.
Do you want to wait? Do you want to wait maybe 2 years till he starts really giving you dividends?
There might be a transition period you have to deal with.
And I don't know that every team in the first round is going to want to apply that much elbow grease and that much polish again to a guy who's had a stress fracture in his foot. To me, I think he's a second rounder. And I think someone's going to be very happy with him years down the road.
Yeah.
But you need,
I agree.
If you need more media production, he can't be on your top list.
He's someone that's going, you're going to have to work with a little bit. 201-939-4513. Matt Neeslislip is up next. Matt, what's up?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Doing well, Matt.
Just wanted to talk about, I guess, hearing a couple callers ago, the one guy who wasn't very high on, Brendan Schreff. I don't know what – he obviously hasn't watched any film. But if you look at Schreff – he's probably the best finisher out of any of these offensive linemen.
Hey, Bobby, just so you have it right with your buddies, Sheriff.
Right.
Oh, Sheriff, I'm sorry.
You got it, that's right. It's all good, baby. No worries.
He pronounces it differently than what it looks like.
Yes.
Okay, so that's we got that together. But he definitely is the best finisher. I mean, it's not even a question. I mean, you should watch the tape, and he's going against guys like Shaq Calhoun, Michigan State, Randy Gregory, if you watch it, it's not like he's going against some, like, you know, Florida Atlantic. I mean, these are, like, top-tier guys he's going against.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you're watching guys like that, you got to say, you know, like, that's what you want to see. You don't want to see him going against, the, you know, second string or whatever. So that's, to me, why I think you go and get him. And
well, that's one of the arguments for taking a guy from that conference. Because usually guys from that conference who are offensive linemen, you know that they've been through some pretty significant tests.
And Iowa offensive linemen have a very good history in the NFL coming from that program with that head coach who runs a very pro-style system there as well.
Right, absolutely. And I think, you know, the comparison is, you know, he's a little shorter, so he can't play tackle, and that's fine. But look who we drafted a couple years ago, Justin Peele. Same situation. And look what they got out of him. You know, so obviously – both of them, with the both, you know, having the versatility, it's fantastic, I think. But if he isn't there and, you know, you trade back a little bit, you know, maybe you get the Eric Flowers or you do what Paul said and you pick up, you know, Trey Wayans. I think, and that opens up second-round pick. Maybe you get 2 second-round picks, and then you could open up, maybe get, like, you know, Eli Harold or, you know, the guy Randall from Arizona State in the second round. You get 2 guys right there to bolster the defense. You know, an edge rusher and a back end guy, even a guy like Shaq Thompson, another versatile guy who's probably going to go in the second round. You could really do a lot of things if you happen to trade back and you know, he's not there, you know, at 9. So you pick up that extra second round pick if possible, but if not, you got to go Sheriff, you know, first pick, no doubt. But, you know, that's just my take on it, and I wanted to see what you guys thought about picking up the couple second-round picks if possible. But other than that, yeah, I'm on the P-Dot bandwagon since day one. So.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, guys.
Appreciate the call. Look, I'm always in favor of getting more picks. Because, look, here's the thing about the draft. You get all the work you want. In the end, it's still a bit of a crapshoot. You never know what you're going to get with these guys.
True.
You just don't know. So the more chances you have to roll the dice, the better chance you have of hitting. So having more picks is always a good thing. But I'm with Paul. If you have on your board, and again, I don't know what the Giants board is, a guy that you say, I want this guy, and he's there, Don't get cute.
No.
Take your guy.
One thing I learned over the years is that if you have a strong conviction and you allow somebody to move you off of it, you're going to be sorry. It's just that simple. Because you've invested a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of research into coming up with a guy who you really, really feel good about. And if you wind up passing him because you get greedy and say, well, you know what, I think I can get a couple extra picks and that'll help me on, you know, help me out tomorrow. You know what? You're not going to sleep too good after that first night.
201-939-4513. Jeff in New Hampshire. Jeff, you're up next. What's up, buddy?
Hello?
Jeff, going once? Jeff going twice. Why don't you put him on hold, John? Well, we'll try back with Jeff in a second. Bobby, New Jersey's up next after him. Bobby, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are you today?
Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
I'm a long-time listener. I haven't called since last year when I was a big Ebron supporter, and we all know how that turned out.
And I tried to talk you off of him, didn't I? You wouldn't listen.
You did.
Honestly,
I had the right mindset with a pass catcher. I knew we were going to need someone to get some targets away. We ended up getting Beckham.
Yes, exactly. You still got your weapon, but don't be surprised if Ebron has a big year this year for the Lions. I could very easily see that happening.
He'll get some more numbers in the passing game.
Absolutely.
Don't know if he's an all-around tight
end. Oh, well, that's a different question.
Yeah.
So this year, I'm real big on Scherf, just like Paul. But I've been trying to not do what I did last year and get, because as soon as Ebron came off the board, I was all over the place. Oh no! Now what are we going to do? I'm banking on Martin. I didn't even research anything on Beckham. So when we picked him, I was kind of surprised. Didn't know what to think. Read up on him a little bit. Was satisfied. But what I want to ask you guys is a couple things. One, who I try and I'm. You know, I don't get paid like you guys do, but I'm doing a lot of this research just because it interests me. Whose big board do you guys trust the most if you had to choose? Because I try and do multi-round situational kind of stuff, like if Scherf, we get him, if that makes more sense, or if we get someone else in the first round, because there's guards in the second and third round like Tomlinson, Can, but there might not be, say, edge rushers in the second, third round, so maybe we get one in the first. You know, I try and look at the big boards and see who's just like, you know, five up and five back of our pick to see, get a gist of who's going to be there in our round.
Well, Bobby,
whose big board do you trust?
I'm going to give you an answer that's probably going to make you do a little extra work, so you're probably not going to like it. But I almost like to try to form a consensus around the few. You know,
check them all out.
Exactly, and you kind of see where certain guys are. And generally, you'll get the same guys in a cluster within its 8 or 10 picks of each other, and those are the guys you can kind of figure will be around and be good value in that zone. Now, it gets tougher once you get from the 50 to 100 area. You're going to have a lot more diversion once you get into that mid-second round, third round area, and that's when it gets tricky, which is why Paul and I brought up earlier in the show, you can find some real value in this draft in the second and third round if you pick the right guy.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah, that's my big thing is that I'm not so much worried about the first round. I loved our draft last year. That I'm looking at like the second, third. Like I know a lot of the guys you guys talk about, but I also just looking up stuff on my own, like them as well. But I got guys like I would like us to get. Say we got Scherf. I know we need a safety. I would also like a corner, but I don't necessarily want to spend it too high because I like Prince. I hope he sticks around. But like you said, who's going to play third corner just in case injuries? I've seen P.J. Williams first round. I've seen him second round. I think I was looking at, I think it was Mayock at his top 100, and P.J. was like 69, which was closer to our 74th pick. So it's like I've seen Eric Rowe. Like, oh, is he going to slip into the first? I've seen him in the third, you know. These are all guys that, if we get a nice combination where we get, say, Scherf, Randall stays in the second, P.J. Williams in the third, he just took care of a safety. A guard or a tackle, and you're getting a third corner to compete. Just, you know, P.J. Williams is ranked high, but, you know, all this stuff.
They get those three guys, you can have a pizza party at my house, huh?
Yeah, me too, Paul. Me too. And then I like guy like, too, linebacker. I kind of wanted, like, a Perryman or something to groom for Beason. But I think that might be a little bit too high to spend on a guy to groom. You know, we have more right-now needs, like a safety and corner and stuff. So I was another guy, too. I don't know if you looked at any tape on Hayes Puller. He played next to Kennard last year or 2 years ago from USC. Middle linebacker, like fifth, sixth, seventh round, I think. But I've seen him fluctuate. I've heard good things, but, you know, he's not perfect. He's a late-round guy.
I will take a look right now. You said he was a middle linebacker, right?
Yeah, Hayes Pollard.
Hayes Pollard.
He's been connected to us a couple times, little stuff. I read everything, Big Blue Views, all over the place.
Yeah, I have him. Dane Brugler has him as his 14th-rated player on the board. He's 6 feet, 240 pounds, as you mentioned, at USC. He's a 5-year senior. Which you like to see.
Yeah.
He finished last year with 95 tackles, 5.5 tackles for loss. He went to the Senior Bowl. So,
yeah.
I mean, let's see.
He just seemed like a nice late sleeper, you know what I mean? Just someone like a Kennard who we just pull in, you know, it's going to be our depth. And he kind of has a good head on his shoulders.
Well,
so you know.
Be aware, 6 feet, 240, 471 on the 40. I'm not one who wants to go off of times. I will tell you, NFL Draft Scout has him as a 5th or 6th round pick.
Yeah, that's what we have here.
And I only did research in terms of film work and then digging on about 120 players. He was not, he was not one of my top 120. Now, the Giants pick in the 4th round at 108, John. So I went 120 players deep because I figure with conviction I can go through 4 rounds and feel like, okay, I have a pretty good handle on who the Giants might get in the first 4. After that, I cherry pick. I kind of look at some of the guides and some of the things and say, okay, is there a dark horse here who might be 5, 6, or 7 round of a free agent guy? A guy like Vogler, you know what I'm saying, at the tight end position.
Yeah.
But I did work on 120. He was not one of my 120.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't expect him to be in there. I know he's real late. I think I saw a couple where he was like the 230th player. He just was a guy that, I don't know, he caught my eye for some reason. I think because he was from USC, like Kennard, I wanted to do a little research on him.
It never hurts to look at a good program.
Guys, is, say we get our guy, Scherf, right? And I know he's like 6'5", you know, 3-something. I was looking at Pew and I read something like how they were talking about he got in better shape and whatnot. I think he's like 307, and I know he already started out with the short arms. You think between him and Scherf, they say, you know, he could be a Pro Bowl guard, Scherf, but if we kept him out in tackle and had to move Pew into guard, you think he'd be able to hold up at, you know, that light of a weight with, you know, I feel like I see I have a Danny Shelton kind of a guy coming at Pew, who's 307 with short arms. You don't think that might be run us an issue rather than push Scherf in there?
I think Pugh would probably have to put on a little bit of weight to anchor against some of those stronger guys and use his power. But I think what you have at a guy at left guard, though, you want more of an athlete there that can move around, can pull, can come around the edge and things like that. So I think he profiles well as that type of guard. Appreciate the call, Bobby.
No problem, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you, my friend.
We've seen Pugh around the facility, John.
He's lean and mean.
And he looks to me like he got a little bit broader up in the upper body.
He's been here working out as much as anybody, I can tell you that.
Right. And so I sense that he has added some strength, some power. Would he like to add more? I think so. To me, if you want to compare the two players, and I don't really like to do this much because we haven't seen Scherf take a snap in the NFL yet.
Do you remember what Pugh's arm length was coming out of college?
I do not.
It was 33 and a quarter, maybe? A third? I don't remember. Scherf came in at the combine at 33 3/8,
right,
whatever that's worth.
But what I would say in terms of comparing the two of them, Scherf to me is a bit bulkier and a bit more powerful and stronger in his frame.
He's more compact almost.
No question.
Yeah.
More of a fire hydrant type guy.
Yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Than what Pugh is. But Pugh has more athleticism in his lower body, in his legs and his feet.
Though Dan, who we talked earlier in the show from Our Lads, said he thought Scherf actually had better feet than Pugh did.
Which was interesting because for me, see, what you know where Pugh has better athleticism? In terms of being able to get out and doing the horizontal stuff and the pulling stuff, that's where his athleticism comes into play, more so than the quick feet off the snap when a speed rusher gets off on the snap.
Yep.
That's the difference. When you say feet, there are two different kinds of feet here. We're talking about the feet to be able to do things on the move, and we're talking about feet to do quick steps off the snap. And I think that's what Dan was talking about in terms of Schreff's benefits.
So Pugh might be more athletic, but Scherf might have quicker feet.
Yes. Yes. I think that's the best way to describe
it. He can slide a little bit better while Pugh can get out and run a little bit better.
Yeah. But right now, it looks like Scherf has more power up top. And that's something that Pugh was trying to work on.
And he is working on
season.
It. Yeah. No question.
Yeah.
Let's go to Jeff in New Hampshire. He's back with us next on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We're with you till 2 o'clock this afternoon. Jeff, welcome. What's going on, man?
Not much. How are you?
Doing well, Jeff.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, my friend.
Beautiful. Hey, listen, I just figured I'd call and try and save you guys. You've been talking about the same stuff for the last 3 months, and now you're doing it for 2 hours at a time.
What do you got?
So I figured you're kind of banging your head on a wall. I had a kind of a random thought that I haven't got a real definitive opinion on, but I'm wondering if it's something to consider down the road. Looking at the kind of players that are coming out and their skill sets and what's being played predominantly in college and all that, I'm wondering if it might not be worth considering switching over from a 4-3 back to a 3-4. I don't mean this season or next season. Obviously, we don't have the players to do it. But two of the things that I'm noticing in the last couple of drafts, it's harder to find a pure middle linebacker. You know, like the Luke Kuechlys of the world, you don't see as many of them anymore. And you're getting more of these 3-4 hybrid outside linebackers that, you know, like we're talking about all day on here. The
Time
Shane
out.
Rays, the Randy Gregorys, the Duprees.
Did you listen earlier to Dan Shanka from Our Lads?
Say that again?
Did you listen to Dan Shanka earlier from Our Lads? He was on our program.
Yeah, the power running is kind
right.
of pushing
and
those
we
guys
were,
out
we
a
were talking
bit.
About how that worm is starting to turn just a little bit.
At the pro level, not the college level.
Right, but at the pro level, it's starting to turn a little bit. And if it is, okay, if it is, then pro teams are going to start looking for those guys again more and more and more.
Yeah, but that's great. The pro teams are looking for them. If they're not being developed in college, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, except.
That's my only thinking is, I mean, I'm not saying I don't have a definitive opinion one way or the other. My only thinking is it seems like you're going to get better players for players more fitted for a 3-4, so maybe you find a way to use that. I don't know. It's just food for thought.
Well,
something
because what happened
about.
Is those teams who then get left behind, they'll be at a disadvantage.
But, I mean, you can still stop the run out of the 3-4.
You can. Well, certainly. In fact, that's what it was meant to do originally. It was meant to give you the speed-flowing linebackers who will stop the run. The problem is the power running game is something. I mean, for example, if you remember it back in the 80s when John Riggins was the lone setback for the Redskins and they played power running game with the double tight end on one side and they would pull their guards and counter, okay? That was always a team that you knew when they played the Giants it was going to be a war because they were going to play that power running game and the Giants were going to have a hard time dealing
with
it.
Well, what you do, you run in between the nose tackle and the 3-4 defensive end. You try to get your fullback or guard up on that inside linebacker and that's how you do it.
And you make sure that your guards get out to that second level and make those linebackers pay.
Right, exactly. No, but you know what? Jeff, I thought about this too. A couple weeks ago, I was kind of just brainstorming. It's something that popped into my head. I don't think it's something the team would pursue until you probably got put into a quote-unquote rebuilding situation where the team is maybe down and you're having a lot of personnel
being turned over. It doesn't seem like something that no one would want to do either. I kind of look at it. It seems like every 20, 25, maybe 30 years, we kind of switch. And we start
let's put it this way.
We basically invented the 4-3 with Landry and Huff, and then we switch over to the 3-4 with Taylor and all our great linebackers. Then we go to the 4-3, and we have the Strahan, Taco, that type of thing. So
you are right.
It seems like every 25, 30 years we switch. I didn't know.
You are right. No,
thought.
That's true.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Good stuff. And you know what? And the thing about it, too, and then the problem when you have, and this happens with every team that goes from a 3-4 to a 4-3 or a 4-3 to a 3-4, you're going to have a year or two where it's a transition, and you're going to struggle because you're making the transition in personnel from one defense to the other. So the players you have might either not fit or take a while to figure out how to fit into that new system. So I don't think that's something that you really undertake unless you're willing to have a year. Well, you know what? I'm okay to take a step back. So maybe if, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, you know, if Eli's retiring and you know you're going to have a gap, you're going to be, you know, having a, you know, a building process with a young quarterback, and you're like, all right, you know, we're not going to, you know, compete for a Super Bowl for a year or two. That's when you make that type of decision, when you can make that type of adjustment and it's not going to cost you.
Or you get a true superstar stud like you get a Lawrence Taylor and
you
say, guess what?
Yeah.
He's just so great. We're going to change schemes, and we're still going to be able to do good things in that first year because this guy is such a superstar, such an impact player, that even changing schemes isn't going to throw us off.
201-939-4513. We have three more callers on hold. We'll take all three, and then we're going to say goodbye at 2 o'clock right here on Giants.com. Let's go to Danny in Mount Sinai next. Danny, what's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing great, Danny. What's up?
Good. A couple of points. I called Paul a couple of weeks ago about trading down, and really, I mean, just quick on that point is just listening to all the draft talk. There's really no real consensus on the top 10 players. I only think there's four players worth picking in the top 10. So if the Giants are picking, and whether it be Scherff, who might be the best offensive lineman available, but is he worth the ninth pick in the draft? Is he that value? Would he be the 20th pick in last year's draft or the 15th pick in another draft? That's the point that I'm looking at. And I think this draft has great value in the second and third round. And that's the reason why I think, I mean, not that I think Jerry Reese is going to do it, because he's never done it before. So what makes me think he's going to do it now? But I think that's just the way to go. Let me ask you a question.
Can I, seriously, I'm not trying to be funny. Do you buy into all the things that John and I have said and others have said, that if they take Brandon Scherff, there are 2, 3, 4 immediate positives that the Giants gain, a domino effect, if you will, just by bringing in this one talent? Do you buy that?
You know what? I haven't seen him outside of the clips. I just have to go by whatever. I absolutely agree with you. If they take him, it's a positive. No doubt about it. It's positive. It's a domino effect across the offensive line. So I'm not gonna cry if they take him.
Okay, and that's cool, because what I'm going to say to you is, if you buy that, then isn't that what you want out of a top 10 pick? You want a guy who is going to make impact, and if he can help you positively in 2, 3, 4 areas of your team, helping those factors that you're putting on the field, that to me is definitely a top 10 value.
Yeah, and Danny, I want to counter a couple of things you said off the top and some of the assumptions that you made. I don't know if it's fair to say that he wouldn't be a top 10 pick in, say, last year's draft. I'm not sure if that's true. I mean, I've seen people have Scherff as high as 4 or 6 on their big boards this year.
Yeah.
So I think last year, you know, maybe he doesn't go 7 or 8, maybe, or 9. Maybe he'll go 10 or 11 or 12, but I think he's still right there in the mix. You know, I don't know if Terrell Lewan goes before Brandon Scherff last year. Well, I think Scherff might go ahead of Lewan. I think they're close, but I think they're right in that same neighborhood.
Last year was an exceptionally strong draft at the top. I mean, when the Giants were picking at 12, there were three players. There was Zach Martin, Aaron Donald, who – That was the player that I actually wanted, was Aaron Donald. I told you guys last year. I'm sure glad they took Beckham, but Aaron Donald is no slouch. But look at the talent. Look at the high-end talent at the 12th pick last year. I don't see that this year, all in all. Like I said, if they take Scherff, he's going to be a big-time player for the Giants, even at a guard position, let's say. You know what? If it improves the whole line, that's a good thing.
Yeah. But, and ultimately, that's what you want to look for. What is the net result?
Right, but if they could get it, they could go down mid-teens, late-teens, get an extra second, third-round pick. It's like, I think that's just my opinion with the value. I think they'll get an additional really good player. There's not that big a gap between the mid-teens and the second and third round. Like in other years.
Remember, though, Danny, you have to hit.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say there's value in the second and third round.
You can miss anywhere in the draft. There's going to be – right now we know there's going to be 10 busts in the first round of this year. There always is.
Oh, minimum, absolutely.
Danny, let me give you one other thought here as you contemplate this and chew on it. We're talking about pro-ready guys and plug-and-play kind of guys. The Giants don't think they're rebuilding right now. They still think that at this point,
John, what with Eli?
They've got Eli as a franchise quarterback who has a window left, and they think that they can, with the right moves, be a playoff team this season, which means that there are guys who need elbow grease and polish.
You know what I mean? For 2, 3 years down the road. I want to get extra players that are going to come and play this year.
Right, but here's my point. My point is, there are a lot of second and third round offensive linemen in this draft who have make it grades. However, they may project as starters a year or two down the road. Do you really want to do that? Or do you want to take an offensive lineman who can start week one against the Cowboys?
I like Collins a lot, too.
I like Collins, too. I think he's right under Scherff on my board.
If they could get him at 14, not so bad.
Well, and so you're listening to me now, because I'm telling people you can't go beyond that, or you're not going to get Collins either.
Right.
Thank you, Danny.
Wait.
Yeah, finish up.
Quickie?
Finish up.
Sure. My favorite player in this draft for the Giants in the second round is Stephon Anthony. I don't know if you guys have talked much about him, but I think he's the best middle linebacker in this draft. He's a three down. If you could look him up, I don't know if you've done much, you know, research on him.
I have.
But he's got the size. He's got the speed. Three downs. He's got huge production for 3 years at Clemson. He's everything you want. I don't know why he's not being talked about, you know, a little bit more. He's projected as a second rounder, but I think he's hands down the best middle linebacker this year, and maybe since Luke Kuechly.
Thank you, Danny.
I just absolutely love him.
Appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you.
It's funny. I almost feel like middle linebacker this year, Paul, is almost like beauty in the eye of the beholder, because I think there are five, six, seven guys even that can go in those first three rounds, mostly in rounds two and three, maybe sneaking into early round four, okay? And I think all these guys, if put in the right situation, can be good players in one way, shape, or form. Eric Kendricks, who most people think will be the first guy off the board. You have Denzel Perryman, more of that first and second down thumper that maybe has some issues in pass coverage coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have a guy like Paul Dawson, who's on the smaller side but can run. Great instincts, good tackler. We know about Shaq Thompson's size, his versatility. Is he a will? Is he a safety? Who knows? Bernardrick McKinney. A guy that some people wonder about his ability to play the run consistently, but they think he can run a little bit. Then you have a guy like Stephon Anthony that he mentioned, Quan Alexander, another guy at LSU's in the mix in that spot. So I feel like a lot of these inside middle linebackers, it's what do you need in your system, what fits you best, and that's where these guys are going to wind up.
Yeah, and Anthony has a very good skill set, and I have him as a make-it grade, but John is right. Because all of the middle linebackers or the inside linebackers in this draft, none of them are immediate plug-and-play pro-ready guys with no dents on their fenders.
There are no Luke Kuechlys.
No.
No.
No. All of these guys have a little something wrong with them. They got a scratch on the bumper, a dent on the fender, a tire that's a little bit low, brakes that are squeaky. They all got a little something wrong with them. And it's like, well, how can you polish it? How can you fix it up? I think they're all second, third, fourth round guys, as you said, John. And, but they're make-it players. Question is, if you're the Giants, though, John, and I understand this, John Beeson is an injury question, which, you know, you don't know if he's going to play 16 or not.
Absolutely.
Get that. But they've got McClain here. They've got Kennard here, who I also think would have the potential to slide into the middle if they needed him to.
And JT Thomas, who started middle linebacker for the Jaguars last year.
Versatile player.
Yep.
Versatile player. If you're the Giants right now, to me, yeah, maybe later in the draft, if I could see a diamond in the rough, you know, I might go there. But I'm not so sure that the need value component suggests they go that high for an inside backer.
I'd be okay day two or day three.
I'd be more day three. Myself.
It depends who's on the board in the second round.
Of course it does. Of course it does. Again, the value component still has to be the overwhelming factor.
Let me ask you this. If Shaq Thompson's sitting there in round two, do you pull the trigger?
I got Shaq Thompson as a strong safety, so no.
Do you pull the trigger in round three?
I think about it, but again, who else is on the board? And
no,
at that point, have they taken an offensive lineman?
And have they taken a safety?
And you know.
The name a lot of people have mentioned is that Eric Rowe, and a lot of people think he can be a nice two-way player, safety, cover, do a little bit of everything, which I think fits what the Giants need in the secondary.
I mean, put it this way.
If he's there, he's moving up. He might be gone before the Giants pick in the second round, too. Who knows?
I think there's enough of value at offensive line and at safety that when you're picking with the third selection, the Giants are 70, right? Number third round, they're 70?
I will double check that.
I have it right here. 74.
74.
I'm sorry, 74. I think if you're the Giants, there are enough of offensive linemen and safeties of value in the first two rounds that also happen to meet your need that you really have to get that squared away. And where you could go in the third, you're really more talking about, okay, what's the best value on the board and at what position? I could move off of that a little bit. But the value meets the need in the first two rounds, John, based on the grouping of players that should be available.
Final call of the program is A.J. in South Carolina. A.J., good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing good. I got a question. I like Anthony for Clemson. Do you think he could play middle linebacker?
You know, he has a size for it. He's 243, mm-hmm. which is a good size for a middle mm-hmm. linebacker. You don't see guys that size really coming out in the draft much. He ran a 4.56 at the combine 40, so he can run a little bit. You like to do that, so you think maybe he can adjust and cover a bit. I think he's a late day two, early day three pick, and it's something somebody I would look at, depending if the Giants think he fits the system or not.
Skill set says he's got to make a grade.
And my last question is a defensive end I like out of UCLA, I can't pronounce his name. I like him too in the second round.
What's he talking about? Double O?
Yes. Come on. Say the name. Sir.
No, I'm not going with the name. I'm just going. I'm told his nickname is Double O, and I'm sticking with it.
You just made that up, didn't you?
No, I'm not.
I think you made that up.
I absolutely
I don't buy it.
Not.
I think you made it up. You're just afraid to say the name.
That's the guy I'm talking about.
And in any event, he is a later draft pick. You're right. He's not top two rounds, I don't think.
No, I agree. I think he might slip in the round two.
He might be a little bit of just a tough against the one.
All right, AJ. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Here we go. Let's say it together.
Go ahead.
It's Uwamabe.
Uwamabe?
Owumabe.
Omuabe.
Odigizua.
Odigizua.
Odigizua. Owumabe. Odigizua.
Double O.
Owumabe. Odigizua.
Double O. Come on.
All right.
You're going to have Papa say that if they draft this guy and he winds up coming up with a sack.
And he will say it right.
He's going to say it.
Double O's a lot quicker.
Yeah.
With
okay.
the sack.
Great.
Owumabe. It's a nice alliteration for you, no?
There you go. I'm going double O. We're done.
All right, we got 5 minutes. I told you I'd give you my top 10 here.
Let's go.
And this is not hard and fast rankings. I kind of split these guys into tiers here. Okay,
now is this top 10 in terms of
Giants,
teams that will pick them or just top 10 players you like?
This is top 10 Giants. So if I'm the Giants, here's my top 10.
Oh, okay.
That's how I look at it.
Nine.
Okay. Yeah, well, I did 10 because my last tier ended at 10.
Okay.
But again, I have the setup as tiers. I'm not actually ranking guys. So this is kind of how I have them grouped.
Okay.
Okay. My top group, and I don't think any three of these guys are going to be there when the Giants pick at number 9, and again, this is no particular order here. These are the guys that are all in the conversation to me are relatively equal in their ability. Leonard Williams, Amari Cooper, Dante Fowler. Those are my top three.
Okay.
My second group is only two players large. It's Sheriff and Kevin White. And then I get to my third group. Then you have, again, no particular order here, Flowers, Waynes, Collins.
All I think legitimate.
And I think Waynes and Collins will probably help you more right away, guys, in that group.
Mm-hmm.
But Flowers, I think, is the most upside potential, best size and frame. And then my last group is the pass rushers, Beasley, Dupree.
I mean, I don't think you could argue with any of those guys, John, because I think all of those guys are top 15 value guys.
And I think if you get any one of those 10 guys, I think you'll go home pretty happy.
I mean,
Dupree, I think, might be a little bit of a reach there, but I put him in the same category as Beasley.
And I notice you don't have you not get the tweeners in there.
Beasley's a tweener.
Oh, yes, you do have a Beasley tweener. Yes, you do have a Beasley tweener. One. You put one tweener in there.
I mean, if you want to move Gregory and Ray into that last
No. I'm happy to hear you say this because it means I've convinced you.
I was on board with that from the beginning.
I know you were.
Did you watch the Combine shows back in February? I was all over it.
Very anti-tweener. Very anti-tweener. So
you actually over-modulated our microphones in the mock draft yelling about tweeners.
Yeah. So in any event, did I really? Wow.
Yes.
So sorry, guys.
It's okay.
I dislike tweeners.
I know. Good tweeners, capital T. You sounded like Dick Vitale.
This is though, John. It's a logical list. I have no arguments. And you know, all good stuff. Look, what I like about this. Can I just say one thing in terms of all the years I've been doing this? There have been a lot of years where the Giants were picking out a number, and you said to yourself, "Wow, if they were only 4 or 5 or 6 picks higher, you'd really, really feel good about it because maybe the cluster of elite players is going to be used up before they get to pick." That's not going to happen now, John. If you're the Giants, not that you liked having a 6-10 record, because who does? But my goodness, because of the quality at the top of this draft, you're going to get a great player at 9.
I agree, but I do think there's a little bit of a drop line after my first 5 guys. I think there's a shot that Williams, Cooper, Fowler, Sheriff, and White could be off the board when the Giants pick. There's a chance all 5 of those guys could be gone.
I think that's possible. I think that's possible.
I would say a little less than 50-50. I'd say 35% chance.
But again,
if
your second five, you can't cry about the
again,
second five.
If I wind up with, you know, Trey Wayne's a great cover corner, great. Lyle Collins, a good lineman, great. Flowers, a guy with great potential, great. Beasley and Dupree, guys I can get after the quarterback. Maybe play 4-3 linebacker or 4-3 defensive end. Great.
Here's the good news.
Great.
Here's the good news, John.
And by the way, I left the one guy I had a tough time leaving off that list, but I decided to. It was Shelton. I decided not to put him in my top.
Yeah, and again,
I thought about it.
Mix and match. There's a few other guys on the borderline here who you could have put in.
He would be in the 11 area.
That's all right. Again, folks, I want to say this, and this, again, my opinion only. If you think that the Giants need offensive line and safety, if you really believe that, there are certainly make-it players in the second and third round who have value.
Easier on the offensive line than it is at safety.
Yes, it is. But with corners that also project to convert to safety, the guys like the Rowe, the P.J. Williams, the guys of the world, there would be a value and a need match there in the second and third rounds. So, to me, the Giants should be fairly happy that this draft is going to provide them with some fruit.
All right, here's the deal, folks. Tomorrow, it's Tino and Lance. I will be en route on a plane to lovely Chicago to get ready for the NFL draft. A little bit of longer commute than my usual subway ride to Radio City. I'm really excited about that.
A little bit.
I am on a flight back that lands at Newark, I think, at around 10:30 on Friday morning. So I will get in a car, and I will try to get here in time for the noon show for me and Lance. All the shows this week are going to be 2 hours long. You guys have Rick Saratello tomorrow from NFL Draft Bible. You have Art Stapleton on Thursday, Giants beat writer, so you could talk to him about the Giants' needs in the draft and kind of focus in on the Giants itself. And then we'll try to get somebody on Friday as well. We're in the process of figuring out if we're doing a show on Saturday. We'll have word on that in the next day or so.
Okay.
We're waiting on this guy's schedule right here, trying to figure out what he's doing. I'm putting you on the spot. I don't care.
Hey, it's okay, folks. I do where I'm most needed. That's where I go. Well, I'm like the offensive line. I'll play anywhere.
And by the way, I also want to plug this for you folks that are free this weekend looking for something to do on Saturday. The Giants are having a draft day fan fest at MetLife Stadium on Saturday. Paul might be there. We'll see. He might be here. We'll see.
Maybe.
But I know a lot of great people will be at the fan fest, former and current Giants. There'll be a lot of guys. You can get autographs. You tour the locker room. On-field activities for the kids. Go to Giants.com. You can buy your tickets there. You'll spend your whole day there. Watch the third day of the draft. Find out who the Giants' fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round picks are. And it'll be a lot of fun. So go to Giants.com to check that out. Other programming notes this week. Thursday night, Big Blue Draft Night Live is on MSG. That starts at 8 o'clock, Neil?
Yes.
On Thursday night, it does, right? 8 to 9:30, we think, though the time might get extended or shortened depending on hockey on MSG. And then on Friday night, Paul Dottino and I will have Big Blue Draft Night Live Part 2 starting at 7. And we'll try to take you up to the Giants' third-round pick. We came just short last year. We'll try to get you there this year if we can, if we can see if Paul doesn't run out of material by hour number 2 like he did last year. So that's what we have this weekend, folks. Make sure you check it out. And then, of course, Sunday we all have off. We can take a deep breath and enjoy it. And then we'll be back next week, talk about the draft picks, and get ready for rookie minicamp, which comes back this year. That's next Friday. We'll find out who Paul's big rookie minicamp sleepers are. And his enthusiasm is going to make me want to go throw up. So that's what you got. Thanks for joining us. And again, I will try to call into your show on Thursday, by the way, from Chicago.
Okay.
If you have a couple minutes for me.
Yeah, we'll do it.
And
we'll
Paul
do
and Lance
it.
Next couple of days, and me and Lance on Friday. Everybody have a good one. See you later on Giants.com. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Be good.
Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a kick on punt.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.